welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a giant show for you today. We'll be joined in studio by Leonarda Joni in the very first hour. We'll be starting off with her just as soon as we do the Daily Dispatch. She'll be joining me here, and I'm sure we'll get into all sorts of topics. I have some questions for her. I was watching the last hour and compiling topics. I think she'll have some incisive views about. Obviously, the war in Iran is going to dominate our coverage today, and it's going to be a lot of the same as it's been for the last 12 days. Total chaos from the administration, total directionlessness in terms of our war aims, and how long are we going to let this go on, I guess, is the question of the day. But we'll begin today's broadcast, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 11th of March, 2026. Trump tells Axios there's, quote, practically nothing left to target in Iran. President Trump told Axios in a brief phone interview Wednesday that the war with Iran will end soon because there's practically nothing left to target. Are you sure? I mean, there are so many elementary schools and children left to kill. What do you mean there's nothing left to target? There are so many hospitals and schools in Iran still to go. Don't give up, Trump. Little this and that, anytime I want it to end, it will end, Trump said during a five-minute call. Is it that the case, though? I don't know if that's the case, actually. I think it's actually not the case. I think, actually, Trump is incapable of ending the fire that he started. That's entirely up to Iran, and it's entirely in Iran's interest to keep the war going until they're in a position to feel safe once again in their homelands. Meanwhile, Iran tells the world to get ready for oil at $200 a barrel as it fires on merchant ships. Iran said the world should be ready for oil at $200 a barrel as its forces hit merchant ships on Wednesday, and the International Energy Agency recommended a massive release of strategic reserves to dampen one of the worst oil shocks since the 1970s. And yes, three more vehicles were hit by projectiles in the Strait of Hormuz, showing merchant ships remain in the firing line. Three more vessels have been hit by unknown projectiles in the Strait of Hormuz, maritime security and risk firms said on Wednesday, bringing the number of ships stuck in the region since the Iran conflict began to at least 14. Shipping along the narrow strait has come to a near standstill since the United States and Iran and Israel began strikes on Iran on February 28th, preventing exports of around a fifth of the world's oil supply. And again, I hear people like, they can't stop the Strait of Hormuz because we destroyed their navy. It's like, you don't need a navy to fire on ships, especially with drones. It's just, they can shut down the Strait of Hormuz if they want. It would require a landing operation, which I know Alex has gotten into recently. Again, we brought up similar attempts in World War One. Gallipoli was one. I've talked about the Dardanelles when it comes to Winston Churchill and the willingness to waste old ships and the danger that poses with old aircraft carriers like the Gerald Ford in the area. Meanwhile, as police move in, the dark secrets of Epstein's Zorro Ranch could soon be unearthed. Zorro Ranch, the high desert in the high desert south of the state capital Santa Fe in New Mexico, has remained a particular blind spot for not only the insatiable media coverage of Epstein and his crimes, but in the investigation by law enforcement too. But that's about to change. On Monday, police swept into the 8,000 acre property and started a search, which could continue into tomorrow. So hopefully they'll find some evidence of the many crimes that were admitted to in the emails, including rumors, statements made about bodies at Zorro Ranch. Which, of course, there's no statute of limitations for murder, and you can always find old bones. Finally, FBI warns Iran aspired to attack California with drones in retaliation for war, which I don't believe. Sorry, all I've read is the first sentence, but I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think so. I don't buy this, but let's see. FBI warns Iran aspired to attack California with drones in retaliation for war. I mean, I guess you can't say that they're wrong. We don't know. We don't know what Iran aspires to do. Did they actually plan to do this? I don't think so. Where were they be firing these drones from to hit California? We're not entirely sure. And would that be the type of thing Iran would do? Absolutely not, obviously.
I'm not an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and an analyst and a futurist and a father and a guy who loves God. influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globals call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping in my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm joined in studio by the one and only Leonardo Joni. And crew didn't give me a sheet for you, so I don't even know where do people find you. Where do people find you?
Oh,
you tell them.
Oh, you can go to my website, leonardoisfunny.com. And then on Twitter, Leonardo is fun E, and on YouTube, Leonardo is funny. I brought a gift for your wife, Harrison.
Excellent.
Because your wife's hot.
You better believe it.
And I'm on a mission to stop the fatties. So this says too hot to be a feminist. This is my new shirt.
Available only in smalls.
Available actually, for the former feminists, I do have XL.
And I can wear this, right? This isn't
actually,
a gendered t-shirt.
I've got men's sizes too. And, if you're a single guy, it's a good shirt to wear to let the fatties know you're not interested.
I bet that would work.
It does.
Have you had people wear it out?
I was wearing this all over Austin and, I could see the fucking fatties wig. I'm like, can't argue.
I know that works. Do you think it'd work for men? I bet if a man wore this shirt around, he'd get a lot of attention.
Actually, yeah, because you're signaling to women that you don't care about their opinion. And that is like catnip for us.
It's true.
We're like somebody who's going to disrespect me.
Yeah, women are crazy.
Yes.
You got to play into that. It's not that.
It's like we need to know that you're not going to be a victim of our manipulations, because if I can manipulate you, then so can the Jews. You know what I mean?
That's so true. We need more people with this mindset in the world. What is your take on Iran? I mean, it's like we're all on the same page, right?
Come on, guys.
You're not being paid by Israel, so you have the same opinion as everybody else.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I'm being paid by Qatar.
Good.
Who, by the way, is joining our anti-Iran campaign, apparently.
Right? Oh, well.
So I don't think that...
You might want to cash those checks quick. I don't know how long those funds will be in the bank.
When somebody sends me a check, I cash it right away.
You should.
I expect them to go down like
with
Enron.
Qatar, yeah. Well, just everything is like beyond insane. I don't even know how to like do my job anymore, because everything just seems obvious. It's like they're telling us this, it's a lie. Like, what more do you want from me? It's all so obvious how BS everything is.
I think people need to pull their consent just on a conscious level. Pull your consent and return to God. That's it. That's our only hope. We're here because we abandoned God. That's the reality. Okay. And, I'm just as guilty of this as anybody else. So I'm not over here like preaching from the pulpit. I honestly think that if we had a strong and abiding faith in Jesus Christ, we would have a different outcome in so many of these areas.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not talking about the evangelical, I love the Lord and the Lord wants me to buy these kids in Iran. That's not what I'm talking about.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think you could have a future in that.
Thank you. I know.
It's easy.
Paula White. I want everybody to give me their money right now. I honestly think that if people humble themselves, pray, and listen, if you don't, you don't believe, ask God to help you believe. It literally works like that. Like you literally go, I don't believe. Please help me. Help me to know the truth. You don't even have to ask to believe, because maybe like you're like, maybe it's not true. Ask God to help you know the truth. He's going to help. He's waiting.
So how do we assert Christianity in this world that is like by force? There's a false dichotomy of you're either with the Muslims or with the Jews. It's like Christians need to step into the gap and like really force our supremacy on the rest of them. How do we do that?
You know, what's interesting is that I think the way of Christianity is like the way of water.
Mm.
You know, it does not go by force. It is just undeniable when you are in it.
Mm.
You carry it. It's undeniable when you know it, you know. So if it's not in your own life, what are you going to do? People can smell it off you. Oh, you're one of these.
Mm.
You're faking it. We don't need any more of that. But you bring it into your own life, and the best that you can, because we're all struggling. We always struggle, you know? Like sometimes I feel like, yeah, this is real. And then I'm like, this is a fake story. And they're using it to deracinate us, you know? But it doesn't matter. You just keep walking. You keep marching forward. But if you have to be in the actual faith, and I really suggest that people get away from those Scofield Bibles, get away from, first of all, if your church has a Starbucks, what are we doing, folks? What are we doing?
There's a checklist. If there's a Starbucks, a rainbow, anything like that, anything about togetherness and acceptance, just get out while
get
you can.
Get out. Orthodoxy to me is awesome. I love Orthodoxy. I know some people like Catholicism. Fine. I don't know much. I don't love post-Vatican II Catholicism. That's why I chose Orthodoxy, but I'm not going to knock them. But all this other, I mean, I know some Lutherans are pretty awesome. Like, they don't like their whatever's happening with the gayification of their church, right? We got Stone Choir, who's awesome. So I'm not going to do any of this kind of divisive stuff. I believe that Orthodoxy is the right way. That's why I'm in it, right? And it's the thing that gives me the most peace in the sense that this is real. But those groups are going to know the truth. And if your preacher starts talking about how we have to do this for this tiny nation state in the Middle East, you're in a cult that's being funded by people who hate you and want you to be dead or a slave.
That's one of the craziest charts where they show like what members of a religious group think about other members of other religious groups.
Yes.
And when you ask evangelicals what they think about Jews, it's like 99% of them
Very
are like
positive.
They're our best friends.
Yeah.
It's the biggest approval rating of all the evangelicals. They love Jews more than anybody else. If you ask the Jews, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, they think they're
evangelicals. There's like 0% of them, you know, see them favorably, and
they
it's
do.
The lowest out of all of them. It's like you are in an abusive relationship. Do you understand? Like you should get out. You are not respected or loved by the partner that you are pouring yourself out to. So
why are you pouring yourself out to them and not to God? You know, and seriously, here's the thing. When I walked into an Orthodox church about 4 years ago for the first time, I was shocked because 85% of the church service was about God.
Right.
And I want to say less than 15% was about us.
Right.
Me. And I walked in there like, hey, aren't you going to talk to me? Aren't you going to tell me something? I need something. And that's the experience with most churches is 95% is about you. Here's what you're doing. Here's how to be good. Here's how we're great. That's wrong. That's the wrong focus. That's like being in a New Age cult or another Buddhist meditation where you reflect on yourself. Yeah, when you go to a church, it should be about God. It should 100%. Be about Jesus because that's what we're missing. I'm not missing information about me. I'm with me all the time. And I was like appalled, but there was something that I was like, I'm a woman and I like to be abused. And I'm like, they're neglecting me. This is a good place for me to be. You
should give them my attention and love.
But I went back and I realized that what they were doing was applying a salve of healing to the soul. If you go into a hospital and they keep looking at your illness and your illness and your illness, it's like, okay, but what about the medication?
Right.
That's how I feel. You go to these other churches, it's like the illness. You go into Orthodox and probably Catholicism, it's the medication. It's the balm to your soul is establishing a relationship with God, and that's what they're doing. And it takes a lot. You know, you can't just go there once and be like, I'm healed.
Yeah.
You know, it just takes a lot. It takes a lot. It's a journey.
I completely agree with you, but then I just look at the like political situation. It's like, we don't have time for that. We don't have time for everybody to get right with God. We got to act now. Like,
everything happens in God's time.
I agree.
You understand? Listen, Harrison, we have no power.
True.
Are you going to stop this? Are you going to go up against Bibi Netanyahu?
If I had a way to, I absolutely would.
This is what we got.
Yeah.
We are in this. They are over there doing their demonic rituals with these Epstein clients and the underground sexcapades. And we're over here like, well, I don't really know if God's real. It's like going into a war and not having any weapons or a shield.
Yeah. Well, and the weird thing is you got, Jews in Israel that half of them don't even believe in God. And yet they're somehow like more faithful than Christians are. They seem to have more faith in, you know, like God's blessing to them than people that actually believe in God. I just wonder how we like reinvigorate the strength of Christianity. Because Christianity, in my opinion, is obviously right.
It starts with you. It starts with you.
Being less tolerant. I need to
being
be less tolerant.
Being more racist. It starts with you being more racist but against it. Right.
But how do we, but we need to like elucidate or like connect the values to like the actual outcomes. Actually, I want to go to a clicker.
Sure. Give me your question.
Well, this is, Fishback, James Fishback, obviously running for,
shout out James Fishback.
He's awesome, right? And so he's doing what I think we need to do. And I think like he represents sort of the best, in my opinion, path forward so far is like, non-politicians coming out of nowhere, taking a stand, just
fully agree,
spitting right back in the journalists' faces and promoting like not just Christianity, but like the traditional Christian values that actually made for a better life. We've lost those and nobody has like made the argument that like this is why things are getting worse. That's what James Fishback does on clip 8. So let's go to clip 8, short, brief speech he gave yesterday, and then I'll get Leonardo Joni's comments on the other side. Let's watch.
Yes. Years old. If you are delayed in buying a home until 40, you're delayed in getting married until 40. You're delayed in having kids till 40. Oh, your entire existence, our entire faith, our calling to be fruitful and to multiply is being compromised and squandered by the corporatist establishment. The same people, the Koch brother establishment Republicans. They wanted an open border because they wanted cheap labor. The Democrats wanted an open border because they wanted cheap voters.
So that's James Fishback, again, you know, far right candidate, but laying out like this is what's gone wrong. It's not even that like it's impossible now to have a family. It's just you push it back 10 years and then another 10 years and suddenly it is impossible or it soon will be. So, again, I think he's doing a great job of just like getting back to the basics and just saying what's obvious. Like,
it's a predominantly white country if you accept Albanians as white. That's on you.
For now, I like how you put it on Alex's show. Things got so bad. White people are in such trouble. We're accepting Mediterraneans,
that's
Albanians.
On you. If you want to accept us as white,
we'll take it.
You.
We'll take it.
You buy some cheap land, have a lot of white babies there, raise your army in the hills of the Illyrians, the tribes that launched all the wars. You know, that's where the founder of Troy came
from. Where you want to be, yeah.
Raise those children in those mountains and bring them back to reconquer this land. That's my plan.
See, you think like I do. You're a strategic thinker. It's like, yeah, we're too spread out. We got to consolidate, get a power base, and then expand from there.
And
it's like
just
we had a
so
magic
you know,
wand.
You know, it'll help because Albania no longer a majority Muslim country.
How'd you pull that off?
Atheism.
Oh, all right.
well, the atheism happened through communism, and then
right.
Post-communism, people were starting to ask questions, and orthodoxy is growing there, and Catholicism. So,
and how weird is that? That in the Eastern Bloc countries, that where they tried desperately to like literally crush and drive out Christianity, and they succeeded for like decades. You know, no Christianity there, and yet nowadays it's the West that's just completely collapsed, degeneracy, just being invaded and dead. Meanwhile, it's Poland and these Eastern countries that have recaptured Christianity. It's
well, who's
weird.
who's the most resilient against the virus? Those who have already been inoculated.
True.
Through exposure. This is why. This is why Albanians will not do things like turn their family members into the state on account of political views. They'll never stop talking to you on account of political views. They might stop talking to you if you date outside your race.
We're not complaining about that.
But they won't stop talking to you because you have different political views. It's not even a thing.
They've seen what that does.
Yeah. And they're totally anti-communism. They hate the guy who was a communist. They hate their current president because he's a traitor. So they, you know, and you see this in Croatia, you'll see it in Poland, you see it in Hungary, you see it in Russia, you see it in these places that have had the exposure. America, with these college, you know, educated, upper class kids who just had their brains totally warped by constant propaganda, yep, have no idea. But I think what you're saying is right. You know, it's like, get right with God and then figure out what your particular action steps are. It's not everybody's going to be running for politics, right?
Right.
Maybe you want to do some racist comedy. Maybe that's the way you're going to help.
It's actually a career path these days.
Maybe it's amazing. What you want. Maybe you want to make a bunch of t-shirts telling fat girls to back off. Okay. Maybe that's your thing, but that's why I say the first step is getting right with God, because he knows where you're going to be the most effective.
Yeah.
He's going to start getting you there, you know, and he'll get you there in the time you need to be there. I mean, who knew that I was going to be the voice against India? Who knew?
Who knew? You know, when humanity needs a champion, a hero rises. That's the way it works.
That's the way it is. And we need to be preparing ourselves. You know, we need to be preparing ourselves spiritually, physically. Get your fat asses off and run. Go to the gym. Do some push-ups. I don't want to hear anything.
You know, it's funny. Something you said about the Eastern European countries. I didn't grab the video. I didn't think I was going to play it today. I grabbed like 100 videos. This wasn't one of them. But I think it was Slovakia, and it was like 20 refugees arrived. First 20 refugees ever. And the Slovakians are out there like trying to burn it down and like waving Slovakian flags and forcing them out. And it's like, that's kind of how you have to be. The downfall of Europe and the European diaspora has been this incremental, just like, 20 people's not that many. And their family wants to come. Well, I don't want to separate them from their family. And it's like, it sucks, but you got to just have a hard line. It's like,
throw the kids in the ocean. That's what we're talking about. Sink the rafts.
I mean, they
women
can just not come.
Children first.
No, but seriously, there's got to be a hard line, especially with things like immigration, where it's just like, we're not hurting you. We're not coming to your place and hurting you. You just can't come in.
This is the reality. Let's just deal with the reality. Would these people be coming if we hadn't been used as the strong arm to destroy their countries? Because every time we have a war with a country, it seems like we get their refugees. We got the Somalians after the war with Somalia. We got the Afghans after the war with Afghanistan. Now we're getting the Iranians. We got the Haitians after the earthquake in Haiti, where we sent all these people to go help them. And what they did was just bring them over here. So the fact of the matter is, you know, when people want to be like, yeah, but Iran's got like nuclear, we got to bomb them. It's like, if that was the case, then why aren't we bombing Israel? Because they have nukes that they don't let us inspect. So true. Why aren't we doing that? Oh, it's different. Why? They don't share their information and they threatened us with the Samson option. So
it's actually worse. Yeah.
But the fact is, like, if you're going to go in there, and what we did, you know, in South America with the United Fruit Company, and we're going to get their refugees. So you got to let people have their land. God gave everybody their countries. Let them. Stop sending aid. We don't need you. It's like putting fertilizer on shit. Cut it out.
Yeah, it's this weird inverted empire where we spend all of our money and treasure to go help everybody else. Like, it just makes no sense.
Well, we're not going to help everybody else.
We're definitely not helping ourselves,
but we're helping the people that rule this nation to get richer, to go in and exploit these nations and take their money and take their resources and set the prices. That's what we did with the United Fruit Company. We wanted to make sure the bananas didn't go up 5 cents or whatever it was, so that the people that run our food importing companies can continue making the billions of dollars that they want to make.
Which is the same thing, same case with offshoring big tech to China.
At least,
right?
You know, all the Roman wars, they let the soldiers loot and plunder. Even our soldiers just give their lives and they're sold some BS goy slop about ask for the freedom. And they die, these innocent men and women die, and it's heartbreaking to watch what happens to their families. Because some rich bastards can continue to get rich. And in this case situation, I think what they're trying to do is establish a global surveillance network so there is no place anyone can run.
Right.
You will be under the totalitarian system, which is satanic.
Yep. Yeah, it's a straight Mark of the Beast system. I mean, I think it's like weird if you aren't like caught up to this yet. Like at this point, everybody in America should understand this. You have to like really be trying to avoid the truth if you don't get, you know, where all of this goes at this point.
Don't you think it's crazy coincidence that in the book of Revelation, they predict that Satan will establish a system of total dominance and control where no one will be able to even buy or sell without compliance with something that they call the mark, okay? And we can all argue about whatever that is. This is predicted 2,000 years before anything like that could even be imagined. You couldn't even imagine something like that because you're at that time, you're like, well, I'll just go to Africa and like deal with the hordes there, right? But they predict this, and then everything in our society is people who want such total dominance. You can feel it. They want to crush the human spirit with total tyrannical control. And you go, this is evil. And I know, even if I don't know whether Satan exists, I know that this is of the same spirit because the force I can feel behind it is one of evil that wants so much control over every last detail of humanity, which, by the way, that's what the Bible says that Satan wants. And everything that they sell is an inversion of it, right? Because they tell you that this is about freedom and this is about safety. And it's like, if it was literally Satan standing in front of you and you knew who he was and he's telling you that, you'd be able to go, oh, this guy's a liar because I know he hates me and he wants me. I've been told, right? So, but when they do it under these, all these masks and all these covers as government, you fall for it a little bit. Because you're like, oh yeah, but you gotta remember, wait a second. These are the same people who wished a winter of death on anyone who didn't take the clot shot.
Right.
And they're telling me that they care about me and they care about my freedom. I should not believe this.
Yeah. It's funny, like that, if we could get more people just to stop being suckers, like that's all it is. And
Stop being suckers. And stop being lazy, compliant pieces of shit.
Right.
Because a lot of people just like their comfort creature luxuries. And this is the way that you are going to be enslaved. And frankly, you deserve it.
Yeah.
If you are willing to give up your freedom because you want Uber Eats, you are a slave.
You're making that choice. It's like Kanye said.
Which brings me back to what I said. Raise your children in the mountains of Albania and make them Illyrian warriors.
I mean, there's something to that. You should write a book. You should write a homeschooling book that can only take place in the mountains of Illyria. We'll be back with Leonardo Joni on the other side. Leonardo is Fun E on X. More in 4 minutes. Don't go anywhere.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan's talked about it, I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these... And fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. Put in the salt, IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on this in 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I'm in studio with Leonardo Joni. We're talking trash about Democrats with the microphones off, which is not the way to do our jobs. We're supposed to do it with the microphone on.
Oh, yeah.
Dang it. Telling her about James Tallarico. We'll get into him later. I have some very important questions. Leonardo Joni is my guest. You can find her on X at LeonardoIsFunE, the letter E, and LeonardoIsFunny.com.
LeonardoIsFunny.com.
Is that where they get your stylish shirts?
That's where they could get my Too Hot to Be a Feminist shirt.
Excellent.
And you could, you know, male or female.
That's right.
It's time for the fatties to know their reign of fat terror is over.
I loved your bit about how fat people used to be nice, right?
Fat people used to be nice. Fat girls used to be nice. And then the black dudes convinced them that they were hot.
Damn.
And now we can't even talk to them.
It's these types of difficult conversations we're going to have to have.
Let me ask you something, all right? Because this is what's crazy. You know, you go to the beach and these fatties are wearing these skimpy thong bikinis out with their giant asses. They're all laying around in the sand. You walk around, you think there was an oil spill in the ocean.
Right.
So many whales on the sand. I remember in the 90s, you know, fat girls used to go to the beach, but they used to wear like that oversized,
like a muumuu.
They used to wear that oversized t-shirt and the spandex shirts. And
they had dignity.
We could all see just how fat they were, but it was a sign of respect.
That's right.
They were telling us, I'm sorry.
They had shame.
I can't control myself and I'm sorry, but I also want to enjoy the beach. And we were like, we'll allow it.
We understand. Yeah.
We should have shoved them in the water, just shipped them out. Shipped them out to Iran, you know? Let them deal with
it. Want everyone
Iran
to be
wants
healthy.
Oil, send them the whales.
Send the fatties. Look, if you want to lose weight, might I suggest thealexjonesstore.com. We have to if you're on Leonardo's bad side, you got to go to thealexjonesstore.com, lose some weight, slim down.
Yeah, get yourself some Ozempic. I don't care if it causes cancer. Either way, you're not going to be fat.
It's made of Gila. Gila, yeah. TheAlexJonesStore.com is where you can go to look stylish and lose some weight. All right, I have some questions for you. I feel like you're the mind I need to put to this.
Let's hear it.
What do we do about the left? I keep getting these conversations where people are like, oh, the left-right divide's a distraction.
Put them in a camp. Put
all right,
in a
next
work
question.
Camp.
What do we do with the fatty? Wait, you already told
put
me.
Put them in a camp. What do we
the
do
same
with the
camp,
Jews?
Different
what do we
camps.
Do with the Jews? Put them in a camp.
One camp, the different camps.
The same camp.
All the same camp.
The same camp. Let's let them duke it out for the battle of supremacy.
That's what
and
we can do with Haiti.
And whoever wins, we will take as part of our tribe.
That's not a bad idea.
You know.
Like a Hunger Games.
Hunger Games of the left of the fat rich. Retards.
Little fights to win our approval. What do you think about the left-right divide? Is this a distraction? Should we all be unified in our opposition?
The left-right divide is a real thing. However, both sides are controlled, and so you must step outside to put my Andrew Tate on. Get out of the matrix and start realizing that there is truth in both camps and falsities in both camps. And you have to discern it for yourself, and you cannot outsource your thinking to a group. If you are having tribal loyalties right now, like I'm a Republican no matter what, you're in a cult. Get out. Okay? We have to deal with the reality that the left is a real created enemy on our own soil of our own people. We can look at the Spanish Civil War for what Franco did. Oh, he was a fascist. Shut up. I don't care. He ended brutality against the Christians, and he was one of the only successful right-wing responses to Marxism.
Yeah.
And what he did was he took out their top brass, he arrested people, and once you did that, the other guys who were just sheep following along changed.
Yeah.
And they were like, and he gave them an opportunity. He wasn't like, we're just going to kill you, all of you. He gave them an opportunity to change and get on the right side. And if they did, they were fine.
He was kind of like the classic model of like the Roman dictator, where it was like a crisis moment. You put somebody in charge. He serves for a certain amount of time to deal with the issue. And then you go back to the way you were. And it's funny you bring up Spain, because that was exactly where I was leading with my question, because this dichotomy is like everywhere now. And I don't know how to deal with it. You've got things like this. Spain permanently withdraws ambassador as rift with Israel deepens. Spain permanently withdrew its ambassador to Israel on Tuesday as a diplomatic standoff worsened between the two countries over Spain's opposition to the U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran. So they're like...
And that's because Spain is totally communist right now. That's why they're against the U.S.
That's the problem, is that like you see Spain doing this and it's like, yes, finally somebody's
okay.
Standing up against tyranny.
You,
and then
use the tools you got.
Okay, but at the same time, these are the people that are giving amnesty to 500,000 people, Spain to launch tool that will monitor hate speech on social media and latest crackdown. So it's like on one hand, you've got the warmongering, psychopath, murderous, genocidal freaks beholden to Israel. And on the left, you've got a bunch of
genocidal freaks
that hate white people and want to silence everybody. Yeah. Like we're stuck in the middle. It's
beholden
insane.
Beholden to the Jewish Marxist ideology. So,
right.
I think there are some good right-wing nationalists in Spain, in Portugal, in the UK. You know, we've got, what's his face in the UK? Rupert Lowe.
Oh, yeah, Rupert Lowe.
Restore Britain. Restore Britain. You know, we got Steve Laws. Steve Laws is awesome. I know Steve doesn't think the Albanians are white. I still love you, Steve. Don't care. And I'll debate you on that. And I'll prove to you we are the OG whites. We got the Illyrian DNA up in this piece. I'm not doing a lot for arguing that we're white by talking black.
Right, yeah, now. Yeah, that's
not. But it doesn't matter. Okay. I love Steve Laws and I want the UK to be British, yeah. Not Indian.
Oh, well, we can get
and it. I don't want the UK to be Albanian either. I know you guys got some of our not so good, Turkish brothers who are posing as us. Kick them out.
Well, UK's got its own set of problems. But I mean, this is a universal thing, right? It's here in America too. It's, you know, how many people are running, you know, for Congress right now that are like, you hear them on Israel and you're like, finally, somebody with a head on their shoulders. And then they're like, and my number one plan is to let rapists out of prison. And you're like, what the hell are we supposed to do with this?
Well, I mean, this is why you need strong, white, right-wing men in your coalition and women. We can help by calling fatties out. This goes back to, listen, don't let the fatties represent you, okay? The fatties are playing a genetic warfare strategy on you. Let me break this down for the dummies who Please. Don't understand. All you hot bitches who are getting knocked up and aborting your children, it's what the fatties want. You know why? Nobody's pumping up the fatties with a baby.
It's true.
And the fatties know that they have a limited chance for the survival of their fat DNA. And if you hot women keep having hot babies with hot guys, these fatties aren't going to be able to get children who can compete with your offspring.
This is a natural selection.
So this is a strategy of fat, ugly bitches to win the genetic warfare thing by getting hot, capable people to self-select out of the gene pool, and then these fatties can have their mongrel fat children take over, and then those are the only children around, and so they win the genetic warfare. Hot ladies, shut up, get a right-wing man, let him lead, have some babies, stay home and raise them so that the government doesn't make them gay.
So true. It's like, and who would argue with that? It's like the best option ever. It's like, what are you going to go do? Be a boss woman, leave your kid with someone that doesn't even speak English for 8 hours a day so
Seriously.
You can work in a cubicle? No, stay home.
And most of you aren't boss bitches. Let's be honest. Most of you are in middle-level marketing, sending passive-aggressive emails because Stacey wore a skirt that was too short and it made all the law partners at the law firm get a boner and it made you angry because they never looked at you that way. Okay?
You could be finger painting.
When you could be home with a level 6 man who loves you more than anything else. Now, you'll never get a 10, and you have to accept that about yourself because you're taking yourself out. And don't be mad at the hot women because all the hot dudes want to bang them. Let them.
So the fat women, they're like the birds that push the other birds' eggs out of the
nest. That's what they're doing. That's an excellent metaphor, Harrison. You got it.
And that's feminism.
You got a bunch of fat birds swooping into your nest and they're ugly. A lot of them are ugly or fat or both.
Right.
God help those ones. And they go in and they push your eggs out of the nest and actually get you to do it to be like, you can be free.
Right.
And then you don't have any DNA surviving.
That's what it is. You want to be a real bird, push your eggs out of the nest.
Exactly.
It's like no bird would fall
exactly.
for that.
Exactly. Women need to understand that women do not support women.
Yeah.
So if they're coming out and they're saying, women, we support women, they're lying to you. It's deception. Okay? Look how well they support you when you want to keep your mixed race baby, huh? And how well they support you when you want to get rid of your pure Aryan 10-eyed baby, right? They support you on that. But what happens when you want to keep the baby? What happened to that ballerina who was married to the JetBlue executive and stayed home to homestead and had 8 beautiful, picturesque blonde children? What happened? All the banshees came out like, our strategy's not working.
It's true. Yeah. Well, yeah, it is all just sort of narcissism meets, self-hatred. Like, it's this weird combination of like.
It's evil.
Yeah.
It's pure evil.
Of like, I'm suffering, so now you have to suffer too.
It is pure evil, you know? And why would I be telling women this? Cause I should be like, I should be encouraging it. No! It's cause the dumb women are having the babies and the hot women are not having the babies. And if I have a baby, I want my baby to have hot babies to have a hot baby with. You understand?
I do. Absolutely I do. The supply is dwindling. I mean, seriously though, it's like a third of Generation Z just wasn't born.
Yeah.
Or half or something.
Aborted,
it's completely disgusting.
And how much of it wasn't born because they decided not to have babies?
Yeah. Again, that's what James Fishback was pointing to, where even if you want to have kids, often just to feel like financially stable, you feel like you have to push it back till you're 30.
That's
and then-
where I say, trust God to provide. Okay? If he could bring manna down from heaven, he can figure out, he can help you figure out how to get money on the table, how to get food on the table. And that's the truth.
That's your ancestors had babies in like the Utah desert in a covered wagon. I think you can handle it.
I think you can handle it. Like, you can handle it. Why is everybody so soft and weak and gay?
It's true. Why is everybody so soft and weak and gay? Again, I feel like there's something I'm missing. It's like the fat people do they want everybody else to be fat, or are they just mad
they
at themselves?
They want everybody else to be fat, because if everybody's fat, then no one's fat. Understand?
That makes sense. Like Wally.
And then exactly. And so it's that misery loves company. And also like they do hate themselves. Look, as somebody who struggled with a compulsive overeating disorder, food is incredibly addictive. And the country that we live in does not make it easy for us. There's constant food cues, constant food cues. So if you have a genetic predisposition to it, I do. Okay. I come from a fat family. You will be more susceptible to that than anyone else. And it's hard. It is hard. Okay. So at a certain point, once you get to the point that of those women, you've lost all control. Your body just takes over. So that's why I think like Ozempic's a great thing, because some of these people, like, I mean, they're literally fighting their own survival DNA. And if you can help them, help them. They don't have, maybe have to be on it forever. I don't know how it goes.
Yeah.
But that's better than dying of diabetes and heart disease and being ashamed of yourself. And also the other thing I'll say is embrace the difficulty. Things that are hard are rewarding. And this is one of the reasons we don't have kids, is it's hard. Okay. But it's also incredibly rewarding. Things that are easy leave you feeling empty and shallow and without any purpose. Yeah. You could just go pick up a donut, but how do you feel after?
Yeah.
Not great. But you know, you go to the gym, that was hard, and you come home, you've accomplished something.
And it's weird. It's one of those like literal, just like, it's just the way God made the world. It's like the hard thing is like always going to be the better thing. It's just.
I think he did that for our own betterment.
Because
I think struggle is character forming. Hardship makes you into a worthy man or a worthy woman. And ease and comfort destroy. I mean,
seriously.
You just see it. So we have to choose the struggle. And we're in the struggle right now. So everybody who wants to black pill, I don't know what I gotta do. Choose the struggle.
Absolutely. Well, and also know that the reason everything's getting crazy right now is because we're winning. It's because like from the Epstein list release to just the way the conversation's happening on X right now.
We're getting some wins.
Yeah.
We're getting some wins. Don't everybody get
complacent. The losing has slowed down, I'll say.
The losing has slowed down.
But doesn't it feel like they've lost the initiative? It feels like the powers that be are like scrambling at this point in a way that they never have before.
They're very reactive.
And they never are that before.
I don't think they ever thought that they were going to lose control of the narrative the way they have.
Exactly.
But you got to don't underestimate your enemy, and don't underestimate their arrogance and their hubris and the fact that they will push beyond anything that you would expect. Like, you just whatever you think you would never do, that's what they'll do.
Yeah, absolutely. And but they've always relied on just like their strategy is setting the stage. They, you know, dictate what reality is, and then we have to respond to it. And by the time we get our handle on what's going on, they're introducing a new thing. Now it seems like first it was Bill Gates going, oh no, that email, it wasn't about me. And then later it's like, okay, I was with some Russian people. And I'm like, this is not a like strategy they're rolling out. They are reacting to unexpected
things. It's reactive
things.
To us. We've actually launched an offensive war on them, as opposed to being reactive and defensive. And shout out to Alex Jones, because he did a great job fighting the narrative on his own for a long time, because it used to just be ABC, Fox News, you know, everything that CNN and Alex. We didn't have all these alternative voices saying what's going on. And we had Bill Hicks, who some of you might believe is the same person. And we had the guy who wrote A Pale Horse, Behold a Pale Horse.
Bill Cooper,
right? So we had these small dissident voices, but we didn't have a platform with voices, having hundreds of thousands of people listening to them. And we do, and that's why they're launching their Eighth Front War, which Harrison did a great job making that video that they keep trying to suppress. Oh, there he is with Bill Hicks. This doesn't prove
anything. That's not
anything.
A real picture. That's
that
not a real picture.
That doesn't disprove anything. We got the same guy.
I don't believe it. You're obviously exactly right. I mean, Twitter opening has absolutely changed the game. I mean, even just from that's pretty close.
Pretty close. Alex, you got some explaining to do.
From Pizzagate in 2016, where it was 4chan and maybe a few people on X. But now it's just the Epstein file comes out and it's 10 million people using AI to write code to go through it. I mean, it's so awesome how much this movement is growing, how much is being exposed. They are scrambling to deal with it. Because that's the other thing to understand. You're exactly right. You don't underestimate them. You never think that they're down and out. You never say, well, this is it for them, because they will set off a nuke or they will do something insane. Never put it past these people. But at the same time, they're reacting to us. They're on the back foot. They're scrambling to deal with the things we're introducing. And they're human at the end of the day. They aren't supernatural.
Well,
they are mortal beings. They are mortal beings.
Are shape-shifting third-dimensional demons.
There's that debate, too. As far as we know and have ascertained through science, they are human beings. They have to contend with human will. Because that's the other thing is people will just think, well, these people are in charge of everything. And anything good happens, that's actually a bad thing in disguise. But no, good things can happen. We can defeat them. They are human. They can be outmaneuvered, outflanked, and defeated.
Well, look at what happened with the clot shot, right? They wanted to roll out the, passport ID and everything. But people, there was enough of a population resisting. They didn't want you to know that it was happening, but it was. So now they're going to roll out the digital ID, digital surveillance, digital currency. It's very, very important that you resist and you endure hardship. I don't want to hear, but I'm going to lose my, I don't want to hear it. Because you got to figure out, if you make some kind of compromise with them, you're robbing from Peter to pay Paul.
Mm.
Okay? And I don't know how that applies in this, but it sounded good. So
I like it. I'm in favor of it.
But what I'm saying is, don't do that, because you're basically bartering your future.
Yep.
Of when you won't be able to say no, and you won't be able to have,
That's the thing. They never are satisfied. You can never give them what they want. I think you liked my tweet where I said, they think you're suckers for helping them. And a lot of people were guessing who I was talking about. I'm like, everybody.
Oh, yeah. I was like, this applies to every group. This applies to the Indians. This applies to the Somalians. This applies to the Israelis. This applies to the Haitians. This applies to every group thinks you're a sucker for helping them.
Just don't be a sucker. And it's like, you can be loving, you can be good, but you're not a good person for being taken advantage of.
Charity starts at home, folks.
Yeah.
Charity starts at home. So you're doing all this stuff for all these people that hate you and want to kill your progeny. Why don't you start at home? Hey, boomers, why don't you help your kids get a loan for their house?
And also, fight back. Don't take it on yourself, right? Because you're right when you say, hey, that might be hard and, that's worth it. Certainly, for the clot shot, I was, yelling at family members, being like, you gave in. What the hell's wrong with you? You can't give in. But you also don't have to take it on yourself. Think like these other groups of people. I'm sick of the white Christian reaction of the school's teaching homosexuality. I guess I better homeschool and guess I better retreat. Ah, darn it. This is hard for me. It's no. Go yell at the school. Go get in the principal's face and say, you are removing this from the curriculum, or I'm not leaving and I'm bringing the local news with me. Get loud and don't let them abuse
smart.
You.
Very smart.
Right?
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Fully agree with that,
And
do the same thing when they bring black kids into your kids' class.
I think we lost that one, unfortunately. I think we got to give up on school segregation. Although, there's an argument to be made for that, too, to be honest.
And you can say whoever you don't want to come in can't come in.
That's so funny.
Come on in.
I mean, Well, it's funny. I mean, the school system is still segregated for all intents and purposes. If you go to public school, at least where I did in Houston, I mean, the regular classes are black, the GT classes are white. It's like actually as segregated. It actually would make more sense to have two schools.
I know. But that's why Mamdani and crew wanted to get rid of the,
gifted and talented stuff. Yeah.
Gifted and talented stuff because it was, revealing the great disparity, and it was allowing for whites to have some semblance of segregation, but also because then they were trying to do these DEI quotas and push in people of other races in there, and they couldn't keep up, and it was revealing that, and then they had to like dumb down the whole curriculum to the dumbest person in class, and everybody's like, well, why am I doing this?
This is like the best example of a time where you just need to put your foot down.
Yep.
They go, oh, well, you know, it looks like the black kids aren't doing quite as well, and so maybe we need to reorganize.
Maybe you need to put them in another class.
Yeah, you just need to go, no, we're not doing that. Sorry. Like, they need to, you know, we can help them. Do they need extra tutoring? Like, we can provide that. But this, like, the first time somebody's like, maybe we should get rid of grades for equality. Like, somebody in that room just should have been like, no, we're not doing that.
Right.
Next suggestion.
Yeah,
like, why can we not put our foot down on things like that?
When they were like, oh, maybe we should bring in Mexicans. Somebody should have said, no, we're not doing that.
We don't need them.
We don't need more.
Why would we want them? It doesn't make any sense. But genuinely, like, how did everything become this way? It's like, you know, there's a meme going around now, but every month or so you hear something that's like, a new bill is passing to disallow foreign immigrants to have the nuclear codes. And it's like, why did this ever get, like, what? How is this? How did we get here? How did we get here and how do we get back?
Well,
this is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's true. I think again, Harrison, the answer starts with fat bitches. When women get fat, men don't want to fight for them. So this is why.
Interesting.
All the men saw were a bunch of fat whales yelling at them, talking about their rights. And they were like, I'm not going to, you know, go to war for that. And then the men were like, well, I'm going to become soft now too, because clearly she wants to dominate. And now you got men who are manicuring their beards and like putting like lip gloss on. And you're like, all right, this is where we're at now, because the women stopped being women, so the men became women.
It's very true.
Upside down. And I don't know if it was chicken or the egg. You know, maybe the men, gave up territory first because there was so much of a demand. And it was the women under this coalition of Marxists, of course. But they ceded ground to the women, and then the women went batshit crazy because they need a masculine force to go, no, we're not making the kids gay.
It's true. Where is the mother bear instinct also in all of this? That's what I want to know.
Seriously, you know?
Like that's the weirdest part, is that we literally have just been groomed into just not defending ourselves against things. And that really is the, I think the ultimate, you know, thing to understand, which is why I'm always like, you know, stop being suckers. It's like, just stop letting people screw you over. Just stop being a victim. Just when people are lying to you, just look them in the eye and go,
You're full of crap.
I'm not buying it. Sorry. I don't care what you say. People really want to be liked, and that's destroying everything. Leonarda Joni. Leonarda is fun. E on X. LeonardaIsFunny.com. You can get her very cool shirts, but only if you are actually too hot to be a feminist, or married, or dating somebody who's too hot to be a feminist.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with us. This is great. Down with the fatties. You heard it here first, folks. We'll be right back.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. They put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue, But this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with ethylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexandrestore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexandrestore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexandrestore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best. And it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Second hour of the War Room is on. Donald Trump himself is live right now at a rally in Hebron, Kentucky. Let's check in on the President of the United States, Donald Trump.
As they do, we have added 70,000 new construction jobs in just a short period of time, including 8,000 brand new construction jobs in Kentucky. Okay? Kentucky. I love the way a real Kentuckian pronounces it, but if I do it, I'm good. But I love Kentucky. More Americans are working today than any time in history, and that number is going to be, wait till you see the numbers by the end of the year. We did an excursion. You know what an excursion is? We had to take a little trip to get rid of some evil, very evil people. It should have been done for 47 years. They've been killing our people. 47 years. 47 years. And I can only say this. They were all prepared. They're very strong. You know, they're going to try and take over the whole Middle East. They were going to knock out Israel. They don't know what the hell hit them, right? They don't know what hit them. They got hit by the American military. They don't know. They say, what the hell is happening? They didn't expect anything like this. To bring down energy costs for American workers and families and businesses like this one, we ended the Green News scam. You know the scam? Greatest scam in American history. Well, maybe the election results of the second election were. I would say what was the greater scam? The Green News scam or the 2020 rigged election? I would say the 2020. I think the election. I think the election, but what difference? The main thing is, we said, get out and vote. We're going to do it again, and we're going to make it too big to rig. And that's what we did. We got the highest vote in history. We didn't need that big. We made it too big to rig. We terminated the insane electric vehicle mandate where you were mandated. And I like electric cars. I think they're great. I like Elon. I said, Elon, look. Not everybody wants an electric car. And I like him, and he does, it's a great product, everything, but they have to have, we ended the mandate. Now you can have gasoline, you can have hybrid, you can have whatever the hell you want, you can have electric. They wanted you to buy an electric car by 2030. The only one problem, you can't charge it. You ever see a charger? You're driving down the road, you're running a little low. And they say, electric charging plant, 150 miles up the road. That's a bad feeling. And we massively increased production of American oil, natural gas, and clean, beautiful Kentucky coal. And we're not allowed in the Trump administration, we're not allowed to use the word coal without preceding it with two words, clean, beautiful. We say clean, beautiful coal. And we had Doug Burgum the other day, Secretary of the Interior, who's great, and Chris Wright, Secretary of Energy. And they were giving a long speech on coal. And I tried to stop them. I was in the audience. They kept saying clean, beautiful coal, clean, beautiful coal, clean, beautiful. And after about like 40 times, I said, wait a minute, just say coal. It's too much. It's too much. But it's clean, beautiful coal, and it's back, and it's roaring back. You know, it's interesting. China uses a lot of coal. China is very smart. They use coal. What they don't use much of, if at all, are windmills. So they make all the windmills, and they sell that garbage to us. Round and round it goes, keeps losing money. Every time it goes around, it loses $25. That's a lot, you know.
All right, so that's Donald Trump following the Susie Wiles plan of stump speeches for the midterm elections. Is it just me, or does he sound like Shane Gillis doing an impression of Donald Trump? Donald Trump sounds like he's doing an impression of Shane Dillis. Jill, you know what? We're going to start over. We're going to go to commercial break. We're going to come back. We're going to hit the news, and we're going to forget everything that just happened in the last 30 seconds. Deal?
One of the most important things to me in my life is to get things right and to tell the truth and to be accurate. That's why they say Alex Jones is right. But it's not just our news, our prediction, our information that are incredibly accurate. It's the products. And out of all the amazing supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, our methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, is the best you're going to find on the market. It's so good for your body. Instant clean, amazing energy. You owe it to yourself, if you sat on the fence, to go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get ultra methylene blue. And believe me, you are going to want to reorder it again. We have an 84% reorder on that product. No other supplement anywhere has anything even close. That is how amazing it is. Secure your ultra methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com, and thanks for keeping us on the air.
Repeat what you said is happening. You feel in the...
I feel like that stuff in my fingers. I feel tingling fingers.
There's the camera. Blast them with full power right there. Ah! Yeah!
No spin, no surrender. This is Harrison Smith on the War Room, with live streams firing on X and band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, Infowars.com, band.video. We are waging the information war. Donald Trump giving stump speeches. Try to make up a little bit for the catastrophic downturn of support in the country. I guess I'm not too surprised that, you know, he's still going to get sizable crowds. I mean, I would think that with each one of these things that have occurred in the Trump administration, I feel like the distance between informed people and not informed people is widening. There's more and more informed people every day. But the difference between somebody that's tuned in and somebody that's not is like unrecognizable. Like, they're unrecognizable at this point. I don't know what normal people think is going on. I mean, I am literally glued to news feeds 24 hours a day, and I can barely figure out exactly what's happening. So, you know, imagine if you're the type of person that just like gets alerts sent to you from Apple, and that's how you find out about the world. It's just God only knows what those people are thinking, which is kind of a shame, because that means this is a massive opportunity being missed. Yeah, people there, you just heard it in the first 5 minutes, Donald Trump talking about Iran, 47 years, they've been trying to kill us. And the crowd starts up with a chant of USA, USA. I get it. You're excited. You're into it. But like, they all support the war. I have trouble believing that. Everything I've seen, the war is not popular at all. So this would be an amazing moment. This would be an amazing opportunity for us to make that known to Trump. That's not happening. This is from today. Thomas Massie will go down as the worst Republican congressman in the long and fabled history of the United States Congressman. United States Congress. You know, that's just not true. Marjorie Trader Brown. Remember, green turns to brown under stress. What? They're all misfits and losers, but Massie, who's running against a great American patriot in the Kentucky primary, will hopefully lose big. I love Kentucky. Yeah. Again, the only thing that Thomas Massie has done is not support the wars for Israel, and then the people he's running against are all supported by disguise PACs. Should we call them disguise PACs? What should the term be for when AIPAC knows how unpopular they are, so they launder their money through the Freedom Pack, Kentucky Freedom Pack, Kentucky MAGA Pack. It's just straight up an Israeli pack, but they're stripping the Israeli labeling because they know how unpopular that is. It's an interesting idea. The crew's giving me ideas, but I can't say them on the air. But yes, I'm just kind of disappointed. I'm kind of disappointed in the MAGA people because we know this isn't popular. And again, we know Trump responds to things like that. Like if Trump were to, we've actually seen it happen. I mean, the reason that Ross Ulbricht is free right now is because when he brought that, when Trump didn't know who the hell the guy was, he didn't know anything about him. He brought him up in a speech and the crowd broke into an enormous sustained applause. And he was like, okay, politically, this is what I should do. Yeah. MAGA KY Super PAC has spent $1.8 million so far opposing Massey. It's literally AIPAC, but with a new name. It's not sophisticated. It's just, you know, they expect you not to look into this stuff. I want to go to a video here. Clip number 13. It's a little bit long, but we'll go to the first part at least. Or maybe I'll save that. We have a lot of like domestic news. I don't want to spend the whole time on Iran, but obviously we'll hit that first and we'll try to get to the bottom of that. And it looks like, I mean, every sign I'm seeing is that Israel is suffering the most from this. Everything out of Iran is still just as confident as it ever was. Everything out of the Trump administration is just as incoherent and nonsensical and confident as it ever was. A little crazy. But Israel seems to be looking for a way out. At least that's the rumor. This is a rundown from Shale Ben Ephraim at academic_LA on X. He says, I've talked to some Israeli officials and have read a good deal of Israeli media. Here's how the war in Iran is being perceived there so far. One, on a tactical level, they believe it has gone very well and that Israel has destroyed more of the Iranian military capability than expected. Two, they are disappointed that the regime has not been weakened as much as they expected and that they remain firmly in control. In particular, the lack of a rise-up movement along the population is cause for concern. Loyalty is confusing to them. Three, they are finding Trump to be unreliable. While Israel favors a prolonged campaign to ensure total dismantlement of threats, Trump has signaled a desire to end the war soon, creating a potential rift in war aims. Four, Hezbollah is stronger than expected. It has hit Israel and with drones and missiles and killed soldiers. They have recovered better than expected. Five, the inability of Ben Gurion Airport to withstand closing and chaos has shown fragility in the Israeli social cohesion. Six, they're disappointed in the lack of support from Gulf states who want to end the war rather than the escalation Israel wants. Seven, Israel accepts that the regime in Tehran will survive and just hopes that this weakens them in preparation for the next round. Oh, good. Yeah, I think we should destroy Israel. Have I mentioned that I think Israel is the problem here? So this is an Israeli guy talking about Israeli leadership, and every bullet point so far is like, well, they're disappointed that the war isn't bigger and more destructive and gonna last for longer, but they're taking some solace, right? This is a consolation for them is that if this war doesn't destroy the world, there's always the next war, okay? They're already planning the next round, like it's a boxing match. It's like, please, Iran, just come on already, please. Please, for all of us. Seven, Israel accepts that the regime in Tehran will survive. Yeah, so they're like, but, you know, that's fine. We'll just kill their children later. Eight, there's a growing fear among Israeli strategists that they're winning the war but losing the region. While military targets are being obliterated, the civilian infrastructure damage is causing a backlash. Nine, the war is proving very expensive. They need to divert NIS $28 billion, which is about $9 billion, to the military. And that's forced the government to freeze social projects, leading to the first significant anti-government protests since the war began, specifically from the middle class bearing the tax burden. 10, they're aware that the war is very unpopular in the U.S. and that Israel is being blamed. They're concerned about the ramifications for the alliance. Are you now? Are you worried about the ramifications? Okay. And what are you doing about that? again, the responsible, reasonable solution when your behavior is causing a rift in your alliance, when your actions are causing your allies to turn against you, what's the solution to that, class? Can we all say, change your actions? It's you're the problem. You need to change. I'm wasting my breath. This is not a message they're ready or willing to hear. They're only going to try to censor everybody. That's their solution. Their solution to their actions driving their allies away is to go to their allies and say, you have to silence everyone who dislikes me. You have to impose laws and restrictions and big tech algorithms to silence those who disagree with me in my senseless, meaningless round two in an infinite war for Israel's greatness that isn't even working. While Netanyahu is painting this as a huge success, it doesn't look like one to Israeli strategic partners. The public knows it as well. Again, it's like his point that this guy's making is like, Netanyahu is saying this war is really successful, but the reality on the ground is that it's not going as well as they say. But then you read his list and it's like, okay, the Israelis just literally want more. They're just like, why is Iran, why aren't they all dead yet? And why are all the Gulf states in America not wanting to fight a forever war for us? They're the problem, folks. I don't know how much more clear it could be. Running out of time, Israel escalates Iran strikes as Trump weighs, quote, elegant exit. Such an elegant exit, I'm sure. The Israeli military is pushing for more strikes on Iran before the window of opportunity closes when the U.S. president decides to end the war. The hourglass in the war with Iran appears to have turned, with the regime in Tehran showing no signs of collapse, the mass protest of several months ago showing no signs of reawakening, and the mobilization of the Kurds or other minorities no longer seem relevant. The Americans, as well as the Israelis, are looking for alternatives that will allow them to declare victory at some point and stand down. Israel is beginning to update its goals and lower the bar of expectations. Regime change, which was a declared goal at the start of the war, is being replaced with the vague wording about creating conditions for regime change and destroying the regime's ability to continue oppressing its people. I'm sorry, but there has just never been a collapse like this. This has just been a cascade of errors, just a comedy of absurdity this entire time. Like, what are we talking about? We're less than 2 weeks into the war, and already the war aims have changed about 1,000 times. Israel is just bombing the most destructive and painful crap they can with no strategic value whatsoever. And they're just floundering, and now they're looking for a way out. We're less than 2 weeks in, and they're like panicking, hitting the eject button, and coming to the realization that Iran is keeping the door closed. Iran is like, no, you started this. We're going to finish it. You don't get to just, oh, if we're winning, we'll fight forever and we'll bomb all the children. We'll just, you know, ignore human rights and international law and we'll just kill everybody. But the minute they start losing, the minute Israel is on the receiving end, it's all, we need peace in this region. Gosh, you know, these international laws are being broken. I can't believe how these guys are acting. And it's just like, you pathetic, despicable cowards. You deserve it. Honestly, it's just like, my God. But of course, you know, I feel bad saying that because, well, the vast, vast majority of Israelis are not just happy with how their military acts, but they're usually more bloodthirsty than their leadership. Their leadership is avoiding the consequences of this war. Why is Netanyahu minister flying to New York while Israelis run to shelter? The Israeli government's exceptions committee recently established to determine who may board a plane departing the country during wartime. This week also dealt with the Likud social equity minister May Golan's request to attend the Women's Day event at the United Nations building in New York over the last several days. According to the criteria set by the committee, which includes representatives from transportation, foreign, and economy ministries, the conditions for boarding a plane departing Israel are, quote, security or political necessity and urgent humanitarian cases. So, guys, we are now allied with a country that is not letting its people leave. The Israeli people, for all intents and purposes, are now hostages to their own government. As they now have a committee that determines whether you are of sufficient importance to get a plane out. And the war being waged that is rocking a Tel Aviv on a nightly basis is being waged by Netanyahu and his ministers through remote connections in Berlin and New York. Crazy. Yeah, nobody else can get out. And even if they could get out, even if they could find flights, they apparently need the Israeli government's permission to leave. And that's why they're not like us. That's why they're not a Western outpost. They are something else entirely. Maybe in the most extreme and extenuating circumstances, maybe you could see the American government doing something like this. But just the sheer idea that the government has a board to determine whether you as an individual are important enough to be able to leave your own country or not. Tell you what, I'd rather live in a country that protects its border and keeps people out than a country that is forcing its people to stay when they're desperate to leave. So just once again, I mean, how many times do we have to go through, whether it's COVID or the situation, you know, in the war now, it's like time and time again, the New World Order activists create these situations where, like, it's explicit. Some people have rights and other people don't. Some people are important enough to do whatever they want. Other people have to abide by a whole host of arbitrary laws. We saw this in COVID with people like Sergey Brin, the leader of Google, being allowed to fly in and out of New Zealand however he wanted while everybody else was on a travel ban. And in the UK, they actually wrote laws saying if you come to Great Britain, you have to spend 2 weeks in a quarantine hotel. And in the law, it said something like, you're paraphrasing, but essentially said, quote, unless you're important enough to avoid it. Literally, it was like, unless you're a high enough position in a corporation, a government, or, you know, an NGO, those people it's written in the law, they are exempted. Were they any less likely to get or catch COVID? No, obviously not. In fact, if anything, if you're actually concerned about the spread of COVID, it'd be those people that you would be most concerned about isolating and quarantining, because you're gonna stop a garbage man from going on vacation somewhere and coming back. That's not allowed because he might spread the virus. But you're gonna allow high powered CEOs who are in the country to meet with your government and the most important people in your country and could easily infect them. No, those are the people that should be quarantined so as not to kill your elite class, if that was the belief early on in COVID. So they have, again, groomed us into this step by step, incrementally. Degree by degree, they've turned up the water of the boiling frogs to where now we are allied with and constantly uphold the freedom-loving democracy of Israel. Well, meanwhile, Israel is like, yeah, we have this new committee to determine whether you are important enough to live or have to stay and die from the war that we started and are waging from overseas. Incredible. Golan, this minister, received approval because she presented the trip to the UN as a political necessity. You know, you got to go rub elbows with Hillary Clinton at the ladies' lunch. It's a political necessity. Her flight and that of her accompanying team in the middle of the war occupied a significant number of seats that were therefore unavailable for true necessities or urgent humanitarian cases. Golan did not travel alone. Joining her on this expensive trip to New York, apart from her security detail, of course, was the Social Equity Ministry spokesman, Harold Hirschkov, as well as Merav Stern, director of the Authority of the Advancement of the Status of Women and former Social Equity Minister, Asherat Friedman, Stern's deputy. See, these are the important people. These are the people, and this is always how it works. Again, back to COVID, it was sort of the best, most glaring example of how these things were implemented, and I remember explaining this at the time. People like Nancy Pelosi, see, they're the spokespeople for the New World Order. Their mission is critical. So therefore, they need to look good in front of the camera, or else the mission might fail. So they need to be able to get their, you know, go to their hairdresser, even though it should be illegal, even though everybody's supposed to not be able to go to the hairdresser. They're special. They're an exemption because they need to look good so that they can present the message in the best possible way so they can progress the communistic ideals in the most effective way. Therefore, they need to be able to get haircuts. They need to be able to do things that the rest of us can't do. And it's always reasoning like this, right? Well, they're the important ones in the government, so they need to have the private jets while everybody else is, you know, carbon credit lists and has to, you know, ride the bus. It's always like, well, but these are the important people. And then you look at who the important people are, and it's like, oh, the Minister of Women's Equality. Great. Great. So if you're just like, I don't know, you know, somebody unimportant, like a doctor or a surgeon or something, you have to stay. You're not doing the really important job of progressing, you know, social strife in other countries, so they're easier to exploit. During Golan's tenure, things operated differently. Golan insisted on attending the event with her entire team for the third consecutive year, even while under police investigation for serious corruption charges, and even in the midst of the war, which has limited spaces for ongoing flights. Yeah, but they don't care. No, they don't care, though. From the Syrian girl, at Partisan Girl on X, the ADL is calling the phrase, quote, Operation Epstein Fury is anti-Semitic because Epstein was Jewish. You know, Epstein was an Israeli Mossad agent who blackmailed Trump into this war. This war that was mentioned in his emails, by the way. In his emails, by the way, they say the way to deal with a major scandal is to start a war in another country, obviously. This is what the Washington Post says. This conflict has also sparked a sharp rise in anti-Semitic content. According to researchers from the Anti-Defamation League, a Jewish civil rights organization, some of it's seeking to link Epstein, who was Jewish, to the conflict. What's anti-Semitic about that? Because they're both Jews? Because they're all Jews? That doesn't make it anti-Semitic. What are you talking about? This is the thing. Something's not just anti-Semitic because it has Jews, right? That's ridiculous. But this was always the trick, and this is why, especially in, like, you know, the Eighth Front War documentary, routinely have it reinsisted over and over and have said a million billion times before, the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism is the keystone to the whole operation. The reason is that all criticism of Zionism is treated as anti-Semitism. Therefore, they can, using this definition and in this structure, when they say the conflict has sparked a sharp rise in anti-Semitism, anti-Semitic content, all that means is Israel waging a war has caused people to criticize Israel. Israel getting America into a war has caused Americans to speak out against Israel. That's all that that means. There's no anti-Semitic content. It's not that Iran went to war with Israel and suddenly people are like reading Mein Kampf for the first time and, like, you know, burning down synagogues. Obviously, there are some attacks, you know, mostly from the Muslim extremists. But that's not what this is talking about. This is strictly talking about words and thoughts, and it's defining all words and thoughts that are against Iran or against Israel or the war with Iran as therefore being anti-Semitic. I had people arguing about this with me, and they're talking about how, like, in the Soviet Union, this was a trick because they wanted, it was like some sort of inversion. And it's like, that may be true, but, like, right now, all of them, all of the people who are implementing the speech controls are all insistent. And the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism is being insisted upon because of this aspect to it, because it can frame all criticism of the state of Israel as anti-Semitism. So then you get to point out to a rise in anti-Semitism and say, hey, what a big problem with this is. And of course, people are going to connect it to Epstein, obviously because of the timing, obviously because of the fact that they talked about starting a war with Iran, because of his very close ties to the entire Israeli power structure, as well as the blackmail that seems to be forcing America's hand right now, and the Epstein files, you know, revealing a giant aspect of that. It's like a joke I make often on X, and I make it for a particular reason. You know, Dan Bongino comes out and goes, I'm sick of all this anti-Semitism. Criticizing Epstein is anti-Semitism. And my response is always, you're just saying that because they're Jewish. You understand what I'm saying when I say that? That we're not criticizing them because they're Jewish. We're criticizing them because they're blood-drinking vampires who are starting World War III. You're defending them because they're Jewish. You understand? Evil is evil, no matter where it comes from.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it. I have for years. But here it is. Scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public that's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these... Fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this has to be put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on. Medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on this in 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theelvishowstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theelvishowstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theelvishowstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theelvishowstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Gotta admit, I'm just amazed at the schizophrenic nature of the reporting on this war. Let's go ahead and go to clip number 6 here, because this is just a quick compilation from God forbid our friends over at CNN. I know it's just like, but this is, you know, what do they say? War makes strange bedfellows. Okay, fine. We're unironically showing CNN clips now. This is just, this is where they've pushed us, folks. This is how far they've pushed us. Go to clip number 6 now.
This is not Iraq. This is not endless.
We're already substantially ahead of our time projections.
I don't know how long it'll take. We have objectives. We will do this as long as it takes to achieve those objectives.
The achievable objectives of Operation Epic Fury, we expect to last about 4 to 6 weeks.
This is only just the beginning.
We've already won in many ways, but we haven't won enough.
As we're achieving major strides toward completing our military objective. And some people could say they're pretty well complete. Could call it a tremendous success right now as we leave here, I could call it, or we could go further, and we're going to go further.
Jin, you said it would be over soon. Are you thinking this week it will be over?
No,
are you talking
but soon.
About days?
I think so.
Okay.
This is not endless nation building.
We won't be building any nations. This is endless nation destroying. Let's get it straight here. Where we will not be building anything up, we will be destroying ancient civilizations for, I would say, short-term gain, but no, again, we're not actually gaining anything. So, I guess probably the best strategy for me to approach all of this is just to ignore what they're saying, because obviously what they're saying just isn't true. It's just not reality. I mean, how's this, Helen? Does this sound like everything under control when you got the Independent reporting this? Largest ever emergency oil release approved to address Iran war crisis and global supply fears. Yeah. The International Energy Agency has agreed to release the largest volume of emergency oil reserves in its history to counter the effects on energy markets of the war in the Middle East. The Paris-based organization will make 400 million barrels of oil available for its members' emergency reserves. It's a larger stock than the 182.7 million barrels that were released in 2022 by the IEA's 32 member countries in response to Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Quote, without sufficient routes to market and no more available storage, Middle East oil producers have started to reduce production, IEA Executive Director Faith Burrell said. And we've seen further attacks and damage to energy and energy-related infrastructure. Refinery operations have also been disrupted with major implications for jet fuel and diesel fuel supplies in particular. And that doesn't even get into the fertilizer that's being held up and so much more. Then you have this, brain trauma, shrapnel, and amputations. Injuries of U.S. troops in Iran in the Iran attacks are more severe than disclosed. An Iranian drone attack in Kuwait that injured dozens of American troops and killed at least six was reportedly more severe than initially reported, with injuries allegedly including brain trauma and burns, with one service member who may need an amputation. The strike, which targeted a unit on a civilian port in the Persian Gulf, also caused shrapnel wounds, according to CBS News. At least 140 U.S. service members were injured over the first 10 days of the U.S.-Israel campaign against Iran, according to the Pentagon spokesperson Sean Parnell. At least 108 service members have returned to duty. Eight remain listed as severely injured, defense attorneys told the Independent. More than 30 troops remain hospitalized at medical centers in San Antonio, D.C., and Germany. So again, paying a bigger price than they want us to know. And so, again, I wish this wasn't the case. I wish Trump had done this and didn't continue to do this. But everything he said is a lie. I mean, we are not winning. We have not achieved our goals. I'm not even sure we even have goals well, like, enunciated at this point. The latest I've seen is that our goals are literally just to destroy everything and burn everything down. Like, our latest sort of official dispatch just says that we want to target all industrial, like, their entire industrial base. Forever. Just literally leave them a failed state. It's the only possible outcome from the way that we're directing this war. So we haven't achieved the aims. We're not winning by any means. And Trump's like, yeah, we've already won, but we're just going to keep it going for a little bit longer. Only they keep asking for ceasefires. The Trump administration keeps asking for ceasefires and Iran keeps rejecting us. Iran rules out ceasefire with U.S. and Israel. It's from AA.com. Istanbul, Iran on Tuesday ruled out the possibility of reaching a ceasefire with the U.S. and Israel, saying it intends to continue responding to attacks against the country. Quote, certainly we are not seeking a ceasefire, Parliamentary Speaker Mohammed Bagher Khalibaf said on X. Quote, we believe the aggressor must be punished and taught a lesson that will deter them from attacking Iran again. The Iranian speaker accused Israel of perpetuating a recurring pattern of conflict and diplomacy. Quote, the Zionist regime, Israel, has constantly perpetuated a vicious cycle of war, negotiation, ceasefire, then war again throughout its disgusting history. We will break this cycle, he said. Regional escalations flared when Israel and the U.S. launched a joint attack against Iran, killing more than 1,200 people and injuring 10,000. Refusing to surrender, Tehran has retaliated with drones and missile strikes targeting Israel, Iraq, Jordan, and Gulf countries that are home to U.S. military assets. Yeah, they're not slowing down at all. I mean, they're slowing down, but they're not because they can't do more, because this is a strategy of prolonged conflict that Israel cannot sustain and that America has no stomach to sustain. So this really can't go on that much longer, especially with the way that Israel is being hit on a nightly basis. And they are getting pummeled badly. Meanwhile, Iran has laid about a dozen mines in the Strait of Hormuz, sources say. Iran has deployed about a dozen mines in the Strait of Hormuz, two sources familiar with the matter said, in a move likely to complicate the reopening of the narrow waterway, an important route for shipping oil and liquefied natural gas. Exports of oil and LNG through the strategic choke point along Iran's coast have effectively been halted by the war the U.S. launched 12 days ago, hoping to drive a surge in world energy prices. And they've struck three boats. I mean, obviously, the insurance companies are not covering anybody going through Hormuz. And this was just, you know, imminently predictable. You'd have to be hard not to predict this sort of stuff. This is a post from a ex-user named EGMALRI. I have no idea how to pronounce that. But it's called The Dumb Superpower. The Iranian IRGC command center said it had expected the United States to be better prepared than what it is witnessing on the battlefield. According to the Iranian assessment, Washington entered this war convinced that overwhelming firepower would compensate for the absence of strategic thinking. What has emerged instead, they argue, is a military machine capable of immense destruction, but struggling to understand the nature of the war it has entered. From the IRGC's perspective, the United States possesses extraordinary military muscle, but little strategic imagination. Iran's response, carefully structured around regional escalation and asymmetric pressure, appears to have caught Washington by surprise. The shock, they say, is visible not only in the Pentagon, but also in the political leadership that authorized the war without fully grasping the strategic environment it was stepping into. Tehran insists it warned from the outset that the war could not remain limited or localized. Yet, according to Iranian officials, the American reaction suggests an extraordinary slow process of adaptation. Each new development seems to force Washington to relearn the battlefield it thought it already controlled. The conclusion drawn by the IRGC is blunt and deliberately provocative. Overwhelming military strength does not automatically translate into strategic intelligence. When a country builds too many muscles, one Iranian official remarked, it often leaves very little space for the brain. Yeah, I have trouble like saying that they're wrong. We seem to be doing this in a very dumb and incapable way. And once again, I don't even understand what our goal is at this point, if there ever was one. The National Guard Bureau has announced the activation of the 260th Special Purpose Brigade within the Washington, D.C. Army National within the Army D.C. Army National Guard in accordance with President Trump's Executive Order 14339 and subsequently directive from the Secretary of War for the National Guard elements for all states and territories to create a quick reaction force able to respond within 24 hours to civil disturbances. Now, the question is, what civil disturbances? And is this, at the end of the day, being set up knowing that this war is about to get even bigger and that anti-war protests will be determined to be a threat to national security and clamped down on? I can't help but, in the light of the Iran war, look at everything that the Trump administration is doing in new eyes and noticing that all of these places, all of these things are being put into place not to serve us, but rather to, frankly, enslave us. And I want to go to clip number 13 here. This is Max Blumenthal talking about audio of AIPAC's CEO, the American-Israeli Political Action Conference, talking about grooming Marco Rubio and Mike Waltz from the beginning of their political or their political ambitions, really, up until the present day. Let's go to Max Blumenthal in clip number 13.
Max, I want to comment on something you said earlier. This is a point where we disagree. I'm struggling to disagree with you a lot on this particular war because I'm very critical of it. but on the reason for the war. Now, I understand you're very critical of Israel, me too, especially when it comes to Gaza. I'm more nuanced when it comes to Lebanon and Iran. But I, even though I think Israel has too much influence over the American government, I refuse to believe that Trump is in this war because of Israel. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, the same Trump that ended the 12-day war, the same Trump that forced Netanyahu to end the Gaza bombing, end the Gaza war to an extent to reduce the bombing of Gaza, the same Trump that forced Netanyahu to apologize to the leader of Qatar. I'm not saying that Israel might play a role in bogging Trump down in this war, but my theory is that the reason for this war, the strategic benefit for the U.S., is having a more friendly regime. I know it sounds like a fantasy because regime change just doesn't work. Having a more friendly regime like Venezuela and having an Iran which controls the Strait of Hormuz, which is an important choke point for China, having an Iran that's more friendly, that's more open to working with the U.S., which can then be leveraged against China to choke them off if they decide to invade Taiwan.
Well, unfortunately, Benjamin Netanyahu, Marco Rubio, Donald Trump and Lindsey Graham disagree with you. They've all said so. Benjamin Netanyahu said Trump has realized his 40-year plan for waging war on Iran using the U.S. as the heavy muscle that Israel didn't have. And we know that Benjamin Netanyahu had this plan. The plan was spelled out clearly in the Clean Break document issued about 30 years ago by a group of so-called neoconservatives in Washington who are actually Israeli moles, Douglas Feith, Richard Perle, David Wormser, Mayrav Wormser. And basically the Clean Break document was prepared at an Israeli-sponsored think tank in Washington for Benjamin Netanyahu when he first came into office in 1996 to prevent a Palestinian state from coming into being. And the concept was to prevent a Palestinian state, defeat all of the regional rivals in the region through regime change by drawing in the U.S. military. You know, Syria, Libya, Sudan. I mean, South Sudan was heavily, intertwined with Mossad and, breaking up all these countries. And then the big prize, of course, was Iran. So Netanyahu is realizing the Clean Break document now through Donald Trump, who has been a vehicle for Israeli influence. You know, I saw Donald Trump's first major rally when he became a viable presidential candidate. And many people won't remember this. It was right in front of the U.S. Capitol, and it wasn't a Donald Trump rally. Ted Cruz was there as well, but no one really cared. Donald Trump appeared in front of the U.S. Capitol at a rally against the Iran nuclear deal. And Mario, that was a deal that got the U.S. a friendly government in Iran. The reformist camp was very friendly to Iran, represented Iran's business interests, its middle class, and they were, ready to make all kinds of deals with the U.S. in exchange for the lifting of sanctions. Trump was being paid to shred that by Sheldon Adelson, the late casino baron, who was a close ally and friend of Benjamin Netanyahu, sponsor of Netanyahu, and his wife, who now continues his empire, Miriam Adelson. And that rally was sponsored by the Adelsons. Basically, all the candidates came up and auditioned for the Adelsons' money, and Donald Trump won because everybody was just into Trump. The rest of the candidates didn't matter. And so from that point on, Trump was a vehicle for the Adelsons, and he's come out and said, they've given me hundreds of millions of dollars. They don't care about any other issue. They don't care about what Americans are going through. They only care about Israel bombing Iran, doing what Netanyahu wanted. Look at who's surrounding Donald Trump. His advisors, Mike Waltz, his entire career has been backed by AIPAC. I obtained leaked audio from a private AIPAC session in which the CEO of AIPAC, Elliot Brand, said, we groomed Mike Waltz and Marco Rubio from the beginning because they were in Congress. And John Ratcliffe, you mentioned John Ratcliffe, the CIA director. And we made sure that they were like good candidates. And then we've backed them since the beginning. And now they are in key national security posts and they are our lifelines within the administration. And if anything goes awry, we have clear lines of communication to them. That's an unregistered foreign lobbyist describing Trump's almost his entire national security team. I had a high-level Trump source tell me during the 12-day war that John Ratcliffe was functioning like the Mossad stenographer, basically getting fed misinformation and disinformation by his Israeli counterpart, David Barnea from the Mossad, and feeding it right to Trump that the Houthis are going to get an Israeli and an Iranian nuclear warhead in a week. We have to attack, attack, attack. And then you have Donald Trump coming out and saying, well, the Israelis were going to attack Iran, so we had to go in. Trump has also said about as much. We had three senior Trump officials tell the Washington Post the same thing. As you said, Marco Rubio also said after a Gang of Eight briefing that the Israelis were going to attack first. Lindsey Graham has been advising Benjamin Netanyahu.
Lindsey Graham's statements are just insane. Lindsey Graham,
and he's been he's captured Trump. I mean, Lindsey Graham is.
I don't think so. Like Tucker was there with Trump. I think Trump is.
Trump just announced Tucker. Trump just denounced Tucker because he's got to keep the donor class on his side for the midterms. It's Trump has been totally turned into a vehicle for Israeli influence. And right, then you have Tony Blinken.
Max Blumenthal talking to Mario Nofal and making some great points. And just to like follow up on that, because obviously he's talking about the people around him. Here's the post. AIPAC got caught. Max Blumenthal obtained leaked audio of AIPAC CEO admitting they groomed Marco Rubio and Mike Waltz from the beginning. Remember, Waltz was caught during the Signalgate scandal. He was the one who leaked the Signalgate chat to another of a fellow Zionist, but a far left guy who ran the Atlantic, allowing them in the Signal chat group to leak the Signal chat to put pressure on Pete Hegseth to try to get him replaced by somebody who was more hawkish, because despite the fact that Pete Hegseth seems all in on the Third Temple rebuilding, the starting the apocalypse, like, I'm not saying that he's not on board with that. He at least served in the infantry and understands the value of human life and is not willing to willy-nilly put American soldiers at risk. So that was an impediment, and they tried to get him out. And then it was discovered that Mike Waltz was communicating in secret behind Trump's back with Benjamin Netanyahu the days running up to Netanyahu's meeting with Trump in D.C. So as our president is preparing for a meeting with the Israeli prime minister, his national security advisor is in contact secretly with that prime minister, feeding him information to give him a leg up on the negotiations. Like, that's treason, according to me. But the only thing that happened was Mike Waltz, when this was discovered, got demoted to ambassador to the UN. So it shows, you know, what happens when these guys get caught in their little, in the little games that they play. So yeah, it's no surprise that he was a, you know, AIPAC Israeli agent. They practically all are. The reason Donald Trump went to war in Iran, according to him, was his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Let's go to clip 28 here.
It elucidates a very disturbing.
The situation was very quickly approaching the point of no return, and the United States found it intolerable, in my opinion, based on what Steve and Jared and Pete and others were telling me, Marco, so involved. That I thought that they were going to attack us. I thought they would, if we didn't do this at the time we did it, I think they had in mind to attack us. And
yeah, he had a feeling, you know, he had a hunch. But Marco Rubio and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. So Kushner has, of course, been an enemy of the MAGA base since Trump's first administration, because so many things were given over to Kushner that it turned out bad for America. And his advice seemed always to be both the key advice that changed Trump's mind and changed Trump's mind to the worst decision, right? This is this story from brownstone.org. It's from all the way back in August of 2022, but it remembers that Jared Kushner and the mystery of the first U.S. lockdown, basically saying that to get this unprecedented, untested idea of a lockdown going, it was really Jared Kushner pushing Trump to do it. Jared somehow believed that they knew something about pandemics because they worked in healthcare delivery. So he called his friends. Bowler headed the $60 billion U.S. International Development Finance Corporation and still does. It's one of those many agencies that throws contracts and cash to big shots within industry. Before that job, he was head of Landmark Health Delivery Service, which meant he knew business and finance, not public health. He is among those high finance execs who were drawn to healthcare, not for the science, but for the money. As for Turner, he's a serial entrepreneur who got to start selling snakes from his parents' garage. Truly, he founded an ad agency that was eventually sold to Google 10 years ago, Invite Media, for more than $70 million. His company, Flatiron oncology related electronic software, sold to Roche in 2018 for $1.9 billion. His page at the Wharton School describes him as young, entrepreneurial, and Google-owned. He's now a billionaire investor at an implausibly young age. And it was these people that they brought in. Bowler and Turner burrowed into a room in the basement of the West Wing and started calling people who grasped both the scale of the crisis but also the politics. Over that weekend, they put together recommendations that then circulated them with Birx and Fauci. The guidelines were refined farther before being presented to Trump in the Oval Office. They wanted to recommend shutting down in-person education at schools, closing indoor dining at restaurants and bars, canceling travel. Kushner had been preparing Trump for the possibility they were going to need more draconian actions, and it was his friends that made the case. Okay, so again, all the way back in Trump's first administration, Jared Kushner was the brains and the engine behind one of the most damaging policies ever implemented in America, the coronavirus lockdown. But it doesn't end there. Of course, Trump also mentioned Marco Rubio as being key to this decision. I also want to remind you from the video that we saw yesterday of Anthony Blinken talking about his time in the Trump, in the Obama administration, that Israel tried exactly the same thing with Obama. Israel also told Obama, we're about to attack Iran. You better attack with us or else you're going to get hit. Obama called their bluff. Okay, so just remember, as we were reminding you yesterday, every presidential administration is pushed relentlessly by the Jewish lobby to go to war with Iran. For 30 years, this has been the case. They've been more successful in some, less successful in others. They have been extremely successful in the Trump administration, despite the fact that the exact same strategies didn't succeed with somebody like Obama. Make of that what you will. Larry Ellison, meanwhile, vetted Marco Rubio for loyalty to Israel. So you've got the AIPAC head saying that he basically groomed Rubio to be a politician. You also have Larry Ellison communicating about vetting U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio for his allegiance to Israel years before Rubio emerged as one of the staunchest advocates of the occupation state in Washington. This was correspondence uncovered by Dropsite News, documents Ellison coordinating with then-Israeli ambassador to the UN Ron Proser to assess Rubio's pro-Israel credentials during his 2016 presidential run. The emails form part of a wider cache of diplomatic and private correspondence now verified in part by investigative outlet Dropsite, illustrating the fusion of pro-Israel lobbying, media consolidation, and tech infrastructure under Ellison, a longtime donor to the Israeli military and staunch supporter of the apartheid state. At the center is Oracle, a software giant Ellison co-founded and chairs, which is poised to play a decisive role in reshaping U.S. media landscape and controlling key platforms on public discourse. So Larry Ellison, obviously, his son just bought CBS News. The Ellison family, a media conglomerate, is in talks to buy Netflix and Warner Brothers and Paramount. I mean, they are going for broke and trying to own everything. Back in 2016, he was emailing with the ambassador to Israel saying Marco Rubio will be a great member of our team. He's on our team. He's on our side, and he'll serve our interest well. And I was talking about connecting Rubio to their other puppet, Tony Blair, who, of course, has a son who's in charge of the digital ID in the UK. So you've got Marco Rubio, groomed by AIPAC from even before he was a politician, vetted for support of Israel by Larry Ellison before ever, you know, making it to the big time. And then he's placed in as Secretary of State, where he's serving their interest in convincing Trump to go to war with Iran in collaboration with Jared Kushner, who has routinely, over the time of Trump's administrations, been the source of the most damaging and negative policies that Trump has ever supported.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried ultramethylene blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site,
You should become a VIP for $30 a month, canceling time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in, so you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click in your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexandersword.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexandersword.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexandersword.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
The Pentagon told Trump not to go to war with Iran because they'd done a lot of the war games, not just militarily, but economically, and said it would basically go from bad to worse. But Trump is the president. He's not a puppet. He does what he thinks is best, and he thinks Israel's right, and that somehow we would have some big, quick, magic victory. He was bolstered by Venezuela, which I was worried about. Venezuela's a totally different situation than Iran. Oil prices are up 11%. They're estimated by the major oil companies and consortiums to double within a month.
You saw prices surge 25%. Oil Brent nearing $120. And then there was an FT report just out in the last hour or so saying that G7 members will be meeting later today, early U.S. morning, to discuss a potential joint release of the strategic oil reserves. And then prices kind of tapered a bit. You're still above $100 a barrel, which is huge.
If the strait continues to be cut off, it is causing a cascading effect of the economy, and we've gone over the different economists' analysis. They all agree that a closure of the Strait of Hormuz for 3 months would more than double the price of oil and send shockwaves. It would take, even if it opened back up, many months to reverse. And if you got 6 months of oil prices being doubled, you pack that into the economy as the truest form of inflationary drive. And you get the entire Trump recovery plan 100% dead in the water and the U.S. bankrupt for sure. And a lot of people were like, look, Jones just now discovered that Israel controls U.S. foreign policy. No.
The deadline for attaining this goal is getting extremely close. And Iran, by the way, is also outpacing Iraq in the development of ballistic missile systems that they hope will reach the eastern seaboard of the United States.
They have meddled, and they've been trying to get us to go to full war with Iran for 40 years, and they didn't have full control, or it would have happened. Now, I'm saying now they do, and they're calling the shots. You cut and dry. That's the big demarcation line. The Secretary of State saying, oh, yeah, Israel did this, so we have to. It's that it's cut and dry. There's no debate about it.
Biden released the money, gave it to the mullahs. And the mullahs turned around and financed Hezbollah, Hamas, October 7th, the Houthis, and whatever other terror groups they could fund. That's what happened.
We got to talk about how we get back control of the country. So Trump's entire agenda to secure the dollar, get us out of the edge of bankruptcy, get tens of trillions of investment in, reindustrialize the country, stop World War III with Russia. His entire laudable agenda is in deep, deep trouble over the Iran situation. He was advised by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the majority of his advisors. The majority said, bare minimum, this is a major destabilizer, will massively jack up energy prices, and will cause a cascading effect. Don't do it. And Trump still did it. And the Strait of Hormuz is still shut down, and it's going to be shut down for a long time. Because the Iranians haven't even tried to block it completely yet. They just sunk a few ships. And now the U.S. says, we're going to escort you through. And they got a bunch of oil drilling rigs that have their own engines and their own systems. And they could just turn those on and send them right out and turn the motors off
and deflate them, and they go to the bottom. And the U.S. can sit there and try to stop them while they do it, but the Iranians are suicidal. They'll just continue to do it. Maybe it takes them a few hours until it just, like Tetris, just piles up all the wreckage, and now it's shut. And now every time we try to go haul it out or dredge it out, they're going to be shooting at us. We'll be shooting at them, and then you know what's going to happen. We've got to send in troops just to secure the IRC headquarters. That's where that little tip sticking down from Iran, that peninsula, that's where the IRC headquarters is, right across from that tip, right on the other side of that island. They got all their bunkers and all their secret bunkers and all their spider holes and all their weapons, and they got trap doors with good old-fashioned artillery, heavily militarized on both sides, and all they got to do is roll it out, and they can sink whatever they want. So that's called putting yourself in checkmate. The entire world is racing into the fourth turning and the greatest quickening our species has seen in 10,000 years of recorded history. You know you're in a war, right? And it's a declared war. The globals have declared war on Team Humanity. They've declared war on the God that made us. It is not incredible. It is not heroic. It is not amazing to fight this. It is survival. This is the priority. This is the real world. This is game time. This is the crossroads of human destiny right now. Right now. And I see a bunch of other people not realizing how desperate the situation is. We need maximum urgency. We're up against the most evil people the world's ever seen. Don't you understand that? I don't want anybody to go out and be physically violent. I want you to kill with truth. Kill with your will. Kill, kill, kill their lies.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
Operation Epstein Fury continues. We have some breaking news about Jeffrey Epstein here in this final hour of the War Room. I am going to open up the phone lines for your call, so go ahead and do that now. 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. Still have a little bit more to cover here, but we will go out to your phone calls this hour. Breaking from Daily Mail, Jeffrey Epstein was a dad. The pedophile's shocking confession and the photo of the blonde he called the perfect woman. This is what Jeffrey Epstein confessed to one of his victims, alluding to a picture of a blonde woman displayed inside his New York mansion, according to bombshell files released by the Department of Justice. In the newly disclosed account, the woman, who claims she was sexually assaulted by Epstein for years since she was 16, told investigators the convicted pedophile had pointed to a photo of a blonde on a beach and claimed she had given birth to his baby. Epstein described the woman as perfect and even displayed a sculpted mold of her torso in one of his Manhattan townhomes. The stunning claim, part of a tranche of documents recently released by the Justice Department, is likely to reignite longtime speculation about whether Epstein secretly fathered a child, particularly given his longstanding report, that the sex offender wanted to seed a new human race with his DNA. The claims have been repeatedly denied by Epstein's brother Mark, who insists the financier never had a child. However, the former Duchess of York wrote to Epstein in September of 2011, congratulating him on becoming a father. She wrote, quote, "Don't know if you still have this on BlackBerry Messenger, but heard from the Duke that you had a baby boy. Even though you never kept in touch, I'm still here with love, friendship, and congratulations on your baby boy." The victim, who disclosed Epstein's admission of fatherhood, spoke to the FBI in January 2025, 5 months after he was found dead in his cell in New York while awaiting trial on sex trafficking charges. She had quite the harrowing story to tell. Handwritten notes from Epstein victim reveal her claim that the disgraced financier raised the idea of having a child with her during a visit to his Palm Beach mansion. Let's see, 2011. That would be, the kid be 15 right now, 16, something like that. The victim's disturbing account says she was still a virgin when she met the pedophile, who bragged after abusing her she was the best. Epstein told people that this was the mother of his child. So Apparently there's a Jeff Epstein Jr. out there. Wonder what he's getting up to. I guess still somewhat unconcerned. Yeah, Mom Donnie has a brother. That's right. Mom Donnie and the homunculi have a brother. So we're not forgetting about Epstein. So despite the fact that they started a war with Iran, we will still continue to talk about Jeffrey Epstein. So the distraction's not working. And in fact, it should play a central role in our discussion of how this war got started. As we just laid out, according to Donald Trump himself, the decision was suggested to him strongly by Jared Kushner and Marco Rubio, both of whom we know are deeply tied in with the Israeli power structure, with Jared Kushner being family friends with the Netanyahus, and stories about when he was a little kid, Benjamin Netanyahu and his wife coming to stay at their house and sleeping in Jared Kushner's bed while Jared took the, you know, couch in the basement. Very, very close. And they apparently, he, Kushner, and Witkoff talked to Benjamin Netanyahu every single day. On top of that, you have Marco Rubio, who, according to Max Blumenthal, the AIPAC CEO, had bragged about basically creating Marco Rubio as a political entity. You also have the discussions about military activity, diplomacy, surveillance, all this sort of stuff in the Epstein files released in January. But you also had a release of a hacked tranche of documents from the Israeli government in November of last year. That's where this story is from. Standard.com, November 23rd, 2025, wrote this. Inside the extended courtship linking Jeffrey Epstein, Peter Thiel, and Israeli officials, they talk about this tranche of emails from 2014. As Silicon Valley elites were beginning to build the next generation of war tech, Jeffrey Epstein was trying to introduce them to Israel's political class. Quote, I have Peter Thiel on the 19th in New York, if you like, the disgraced financier who was facing renewed allegations that he sexually abused minors, emailed former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak in April 2014. Barak was intrigued. Peter Thiel could be very interesting, he wrote back, misspelling the name of the famed venture capitalist and co-founder of Palantir. That same year, Ron Proser, then Israel's UN ambassador, emailed Thiel at least six times in an effort to get FaceTime with the tech titan and a job, apparently angling for a lucrative advisor position at the secretive data and analytics company Thiel co-founded. Let's have lunch away from the office, Proser wrote Thiel in May 2014, so we can have some quality time together without interruptions. Leaked emails from Israeli officials obtained by the Iran-linked hacking group Handala, uploaded by the nonprofit Distributed Denial of Secrets and reviewed by the Standard, show that years before Palantir's rise, Israeli officials were jockeying for Thiel's attention and access to his company. In other words, making it a vehicle for their ambitions. The cash, which includes correspondence between Barak, Proser, former Israeli Defense Minister Benny Gantz, and other senior Israeli officials, offers a rare peek behind the curtain of defense tech diplomacy, a revolving door of sorts in which national security officials, venture capitalists, and other geopolitical titans work to influence one another. It shows how Silicon Valley and Israel's political establishment have been intertwined for far longer and more intimately than many realize. Proser, Thiel, and Barak did not respond to requests for comment. So just think about the cast of characters we have so far in this. I've read about half a page of one article, right? You've got Jeffrey Epstein, disgraced financier, sex trafficker, kingpin of the global Israeli mafia. Ehud Barak, former prime minister, often stayed at Jeffrey Epstein's house, caught on video going in and out, lying about it later. You have Ron Proser, who, of course, was the person that Larry Ellison was emailing about vetting Marco Rubio and connecting Marco Rubio to Tony Blair, knowing that he would be good for them for Israel. This article gets into that later. But just laying out Benny Gantz, also a Israeli defense minister, other senior officials, Peter Thiel, social, like, this is the New World Order. This is the elite. This is the Illuminati. This is them organizing and collaborating and setting up companies that will soon, well, that when the time it was written, would soon become the primary AI surveillance provider for the United States, who at this point is on the cusp of being the operating system upon which the Mark of the Beast operates. So it goes on. The hacked emails, which date from the early 2000s to 2018, read like an A-list celebrity Silicon Valley Rolodex. You've got Thiel, the Palantir CEO, Alex Karp, Oracle Chairman Larry Ellison, Oracle Executive Vice Chair Safra Katz, and Jeff Bezos all making appearance, mostly on the receiving end of Israeli officials' entreaties to Silicon Valley. Some of the emails are reported here for the first time. The emails were posted with metadata and cryptographic signatures that are usually used to verify such hacks. And essentially, the contents of these emails has been outright and totally confirmed. So you can just know that when you're reading this, you're reading their actual words. Ben Freeman, the director of Democratizing Foreign Policy Program at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, a foreign policy think tank, said the level of contact between Silicon Valley and the top Israeli figures is, quote, not surprising at all. Israel lives next to a very tough neighborhood, right? He said. So Israel has always been seeking the great next technological advantage to help them on the battlefield. And, you know, they also are kind of secretly at war with America, too. And it's convenient to have the methods of communication by which your enemy communicates. It's actually the best advantage you could ever possibly have. In the years since the emails were sent, Palantir and other Silicon Valley giants have deepened their relationships with Israel, particularly after Hamas's October 7th, 2023 attack, when tech companies became some of Israel's most vocal corporate allies. The week after the attack, Palantir bought a full-page pad in the New York Times declaring, Palantir stands with Israel. It's not just about Israel, Karp told CNBC last year. I mean, okay, it's a big ad that says you stand with Israel, but it's not about Israel. It's like, do you believe in the West? Do you believe the West has created a superior way of living? Yeah, and we're trying to desperately defend it against you people. And it's becoming increasingly difficult. The West created a place in a world where, corruption was punished and scheming was frowned upon and collective punishment was anathema. It was a really great thing we had going. Too bad it's been hijacked and corrupted by psychopaths with keyboards who were placed in their position. Now, you know, the interesting thing is it's not like this is all in retrospect, sort of like confirmation bias, right? It's not like you can go in here and see them emailing a bunch of different, you know, surveillance providers and we're just noticing the Palantir one because we have, you know, we can look back retrospectively and we know what Palantir became. So we find this interesting because of what Palantir became. No. This was the planning documents that created Palantir. This is why Palantir became such a big thing. There weren't other, you know, possible candidates that Palantir just happened to win out and these guys like happened to pick Palantir, but maybe they picked somebody else. No. They decided early on, the early 2000s, okay, Palantir is the vehicle. And then they collaborated and coordinated and worked on getting Peter Thiel on their side and in their cabal. And whether he was before or not, sort of debatable. But at this point, it's certain. In the emails, no tech company surfaces more often or draws more interest from Israeli figures than Palantir. At the time, Palantir was a Silicon Valley star valued at $15 billion. By the end of 2014, but small compared to Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics, whose market caps were $60 billion and $46 billion respectively. Led by then and now CEO Alex Karp, Palantir was just establishing its Israel team, packing the office with former Israeli intelligence operatives, and pitching its software to the country's government. So again, it was founded by Israeli people. It's run by Israeli people. It's staffed by Israeli former intelligence agents. And now they're going to do business in Israel. But they started off creating it in America, so it would look like an American company servicing Israel, when in reality, from the beginning, and as we see in these emails, it was always being manipulated and coordinated and given power by the Israelis and Jeffrey Epstein. By 2014, Epstein had a relationship with Thiel. The two had at least three meetings scheduled in September of that year, according to copies of Epstein's calendar. In hindsight, they were getting into business together. In the year or so after these meetings, Epstein put $40 million into Valar Ventures, a firm Thiel co-founded. Thiel has not been accused of any wrongdoing in connection with his relationship with Epstein. But I guess it depends on how you define wrongdoing. Nothing illegal, we should say. Meanwhile, Epstein had forged a close relationship with Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel. An investigation by DropSite found that Epstein, through networking and social dinners, appeared to help Barak broker surveillance deals with the government of Cote d'Ivoire in 2012. Since then, one of Epstein's sex trafficking victims has accused Barack of raping her. Barack has denied the allegations. And again, I'm literally just reading this whole article because I think this is all like incredibly important, especially now that the Iran war started and that Marco Rubio is in the center of it and that Palantir is making bank off it and helping to, you know, pick the targets. And we'll get into what's happening with Anthropic and Claude because I think that ties in too. I don't think it's, you know, anything to do with their software not being safe. I think it has everything to do with they're not Palantir. They aren't the ones who were set up for this. They aren't the ones who were designed to fill this role that they were creating. So, of course, they'll come up with whatever excuse they need to get them out. But at the end of the day, it's because Palantir serves the needs of the people in charge, like Jeffrey Epstein. In 2014, Epstein was eager to connect his two contacts, urging Barack over email to have dinner with Thiel. Barack eventually agreed to Epstein's overtures and, according to emails he sent to friends, had dinner with the Palantir co-founder in June 2014. The day before the dinner, Barack confessed to Gary Fagel, a billionaire who was an executive at a commodity trading firm, Glencore, that he'd crossed paths with Thiel a few years prior at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. He was, I guess, under some drug impact, he wrote, probably doesn't even recall it. Literally just like a bunch of drugged out weirdos collaborating with each other, meeting on mountaintops in Davos, raping women, and starting tech firms. Isn't this amazing? In 2016, Barack would go to meet senior partners at, quote, a new investment fund owned by Peter Thiel and JE, presumably he means Valar Ventures, to speak about Reporti, an emergency notification startup backed by Barack. In 2018, the Founders Fund, co-founded by Thiel, invested in part of Reporti's $15 million Series B. And we'll just finish here with this, because this is the part that I believe talks about Barack wasn't alone in trying to Marco Rubio. Barack wasn't alone in trying to court Thiel. Other Israeli officials saw value in the connection. Prosser emailed Thiel and met him for lunch in May 2014 in New York City. A thank you email to Thiel. Prosser described the conversation as truthful, analytical, and interesting. Prosser even strategized with his son, Lior Prosser, then partner at Tel Aviv venture firm Elevator, on how to court Thiel. Talk about your new role in the Arab world, Lior wrote. It will fascinate him. 12 hours later, Israel's UN ambassador took the advice, saying, quote, it has not been publicized yet, but I will be heading the negotiations between Israel and the Arab world as a special envoy, Prosser wrote to Thiel in September 2015. My biggest focus area are the countries whose newly found strategic interests coincide with Israel, mostly Saudis, Gulfies, and others best spoken in person. This is it. This is it. Like, this is how it works. This is the New World Order. This is the powers that be, right? This is who we're talking about. This is how it works. This is the planning that created the situation that we are now in. And it goes on. I know it does mention, I believe it does mention the Rubio connection here. Yeah, this part's important. Palantir wasn't the only company to catch Israel's attention a decade ago. In the same leaked emails, a constellation of names, Oracle, Microsoft, Amazon, often appear repeatedly as Israeli political figures sought audiences with the people shaping the world's digital infrastructure. Again, not because they want to silence people criticizing Israel, because they want control of the information flow to use to their own ends, because they have ambitions that if the American people knew about them, they would rise up and stop them from happening. So you have to control the methods of communication so you can silence the warning bells that the Americans need to let us know we have been invaded and are under attack. There's a great meme. It's one of the Frog Post memes. It says something like that. America is under attack and the enemy has captured the methods of communication we need to spread the word that we're under attack. And this is what they're doing. This is what we're describing right now as we read. The emails show Silicon Valley and Israel worked in tandem, helping each other get access to various nexuses of power. For example, in 2015, after Ellison spoke with then-Florida Senator Marco Rubio, Prosser wanted a full debriefing. How was the conversation with Mario Rubio, he wrote. Mario Rubio. Did he pass your scrutiny? Did you have chance to talk about Israel? Ellison, a vocal Zionist, reassured Prosser. Great meeting with Marco Rubio. I set him up with Tony Blair, he said, referring to the former British Prime Minister. Marco will be a great friend for Israel. So in just this article and then knowing like a little bit of context around what else these guys get up to and what they've been involved in since the time that these emails were written. Remember, the latest email from this tranche was 2018, I believe, but most of them were from the early 2000s, early 2010s. So for the last 10 years, at least, this plan has been in motion, getting the key players in the right positions. You've got Peter Thiel. You've got Marco Rubio. So they're all either Israeli or Israeli puppets or just American Jews that work for Israel and in tandem and for Mossad or, you know, the you know, Israeli power structure in some way, like Alex Karp and Peter Thiel. But you also have the phenomenon of the family. It's always a family affair, right? Ron Proser is, you know, the Israeli defense guy. He's talking to Larry Ellison about vetting Marco Rubio and connecting him with fellow puppet Tony Blair. Meanwhile, his son, Lior Proser, is becoming the UN ambassador. Larry Ellison's son is David Ellison. He's owning CBS and runs the media conglomerate. Like they, it's a nobility. It's a royalty. It is a self-contained collection of families that pass on power to their children and wield power between each other in total secrecy in an absolutely undemocratic and just purely selfish fashion. Just so we understand that when the ADL comes out to say that Operation Epstein Fury is anti-Semitic trying to connect Epstein, just remember, Epstein was one of the guys that was in the cabal that was planning this war, that got this war going. He was one of the people manipulating and orchestrating between Marco Rubio and Peter Thiel and Ehud Barak and Proser and like all these people. He was instrumental in all of this. Without Jeffrey Epstein, we probably wouldn't be at war with Iran right now. Maybe just because his files got released and we're just going to war to distract from that. But at the very least, because he was instrumental in setting up the relationships that put the people in positions to wage this war. And let's go to clip number 19 here, where again, for the 10,000th time, another American official with insider official knowledge has come out to say, yeah, Israel got us into this war. Duh. Let's go to clip 19.
What is left? Why are we at war with Iran?
Great question. Yeah, great question. I mean, the simplest explanation, you know, might be the one that they gave 24 hours in that they've kind of tried to backtrack since then, which is that Israel made us do it. That Bibi decided on this timeline. Netanyahu decided he wanted to attack. And he convinced Trump to join him by scaring Trump into believing that U.S. assets in the region would be at risk. And so Trump was better off just joining Netanyahu. I hope that isn't the full explanation, but you're right. As we are now hearing that the nuclear program is not part of their targeting campaign, as we're now more confident that even harder line leadership is taking hold, as the Strait of Hormuz is, you know, still being shut down, even as we get their Navy, what's left as the explanation? It might just be that Israel forced our hand. And how weak does that make the United States look? How weak are we if our allies can force us into wars of choice that are bad for U.S. national security interests?
Yep, it's the Epstein War after all. Israel forcing us into it. Now, I'll show you some other videos on the other side talking about like where this goes from here. Turns out we had a little glitch. If you want to call in, the number to dial 1-877-789-2539. What is your take on the Iran war? Am I getting it wrong? Am I missing something here? Are we winning? Is this going to be a great thing at the end of the day? Or is this all ridiculous? You let me know what you think. Give us a call. We'll go right out to your calls. I won't worry about doing the videos. I'll just go out to your calls in the final segment so we can get to as many as possible. 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. And I was watching the Alex Jones show today. I heard the callers that he got. A lot of them call in here and are regulars. I heard the callers that Leonardo Joni got. I'm expecting the highest quality callers for today's broadcast. 1-877-789-2539. And I also want to, of course, remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. The long-awaited, much-anticipated, thoroughly miraculous iodine tincture is back in stock, folks. I know this has been one of the it always was one of the most beloved products at the InfoWars store, our Survival Shield X2. This is the same but better, okay? Precision-prepared atomic iodine, high-quality trace mineral tincture designed specifically to support thyroid function, hormone balance, and healthy metabolic signaling. It's T3 Trifecta Iodine Tincture, available now at thealexjonesstore.com. 50% off for VIP members, 25% off for non-VIPs. Get it now. It's selling out, and it's going to take a while to stock back up. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts, how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down, to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades, so they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research, the human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer, but they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation. Total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect. But it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our ultra methylene blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. Phone lines filling up here. Let me go quickly to clip 26. There's basically three Big stories I haven't gotten to today that I'll have to save for tomorrow. The first, revealed by John Solomon, is that the Spygate scandal is a lot bigger than originally reported. Sitting down, you thought Obama's Spygate was bad. Wait till you get a load of this new plot. This is from Revolver. But essentially, they're on top of Arctic Frost. There are four investigations that were discovered, basically proving that for the entirety of the Biden administration and the Trump administration, they were just spying on all of us, just absolutely surveilling all of us. That is a very big story from The Storm Has Arrived on X. John Solomon breaks down the bombshell story that just the news broke earlier today about the FBI running multiple investigations into Trump. We all know about Crossfire Hurricane and Arctic Frost, but Cash Patel's FBI has uncovered that there were multiple investigations into Trump under Chris Wray's FBI. The FBI literally treated the duly elected president as a national security threat for 9 years. Let that sink in. The man the majority of Americans voted into office was treated like a national security threat by the people trying to cling to power. Quote, from the moment President Trump secured the nomination in the summer of 2016 to the point where he raised his hand for the second inauguration in 2025, he was subjected to four straight consecutive counterintelligence probes. The FBI essentially treated the man twice elected president as a national security threat. That's what counterintelligence investigations are. So Crossfire Hurricane was the Russia collusion hoax. Newly revealed was the Round River project. That treated anybody who looked into Hunter Biden as a national security threat. So they were launching counterintelligence probes against anybody trying to expose the rampant criminality of the president's son. Plasmic Echo was an investigation into Susie Wiles and Cash Patel. And then Arctic Frost was the investigation into Trump and MAGA supporters for the 2020 election. The levels of corruption just keep getting worse and worse, and we find out more and more. There was no red line they would not cross to get to Trump. These people need to go to jail for this. And they will. Well, they actually have to, or else we have to have a revolution. These are our only options, basically, at this point. Either the duly elected lawful authorities deal with this, or else we don't have a country anymore, and it's time to, you know, make use of the Second Amendment, basically. Like, tell me I'm wrong. When we elect a president, and they're not allowed to serve as president, that's the end of our country, and we need to do something about that. Meanwhile, the other story is that apparently Tulsi Gabbard has come out announcing that the FBI will soon release declassified documents over the next few days, proving international interference in the 2020 election. So that's extremely interesting. And then finally, Representative James Comer has come out and revealed some interesting information about Jeffrey Epstein. I'll show this video then out to your phone calls. Let's go to clip number 26. This is posted by Shadow of Ezra. This is Representative James Comer talking about some interesting names Jeffrey Epstein's accountant provided. Let's watch.
First of all, Mr. Khan's answering every question thus far. We've completed 2 full hours of depositions. I would say we are possibly at the halfway point. It could last more than 4 hours, but he confirmed there were 5 clients that paid money to Epstein, and that was Les Wexner, Lynn Dubin, Stephen Sanofsky, the Rothschilds, and Leon Black. We've already deposed Wexner, and we're going to be deposing Leon Black very soon.
So there you go. The Rothschilds, Wexner, Leon Black, and a few others who were basically the financiers of Jeffrey Epstein, gave him his money so that he could work as an agent for them and their cabal and their operations, as again we've laid out here. So like, even in just like the last 15 minutes of the show, if you've taken all the names that I've said and put them on a chart, start drawing lines, connecting them, you're like halfway to having illustrated the powers that be, right? From Ellison to Rubio to, these are them. These are them. The billionaires, political elite, the sex traffickers. They're all in the same mafia. And the war with Iran is their piece de resistance, their ultimate success. With that, we got to the calls. Let's go to Joe in California on line 3. Joe in California talking about Iran war and Israel on line 3. Guys, let's go to line 3 now, please. There you go. All right, Joe, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Harrison, what's up, bro? Love your show. I got to plug Methylene Blue. That does crazy things to my workout, man. That's legit, and I'm not one to plug supplements. But anyways, hey, man, you're right on point about Iran, man. We didn't vote for this. We voted for no more wars, not endless wars. Yeah. And what's going on here, man, is the average man. I'm sorry for talking, Harrison. Interject whatever you want.
No, go.
I'm tired of the average man at your church parish or at your school board or on the soccer field, wherever, not speaking up, not saying just basic things. You know, like, hey, man, are you how do you feel about this? People didn't want to talk about it. You know, it's like the Epstein files. People didn't want to. It scared them. You know what I mean?
Exactly. No, dude, they get scared. Sorry, not to interrupt, but like, that's the craziest thing. And you can see it, man. You mention something and people's heads go down, their eyes avert, and like, they're actually scared to talk about this stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like Bambi and Taylor Swift had a kid, man, right? They just kind of like, their knees kind of get skinny and their eyes get big, and it's like, you're a grown man.
Right.
Like, isn't it? And so anyway, so what's happening, man, our silence has led to just this massive genocide, both in Palestine, man, and now in Iran. And another thing that really gets me, grinds my gears, but really, really gets me, man, is like, we need to go fight communism in Venezuela. We need to go fight terrorism in Iran. Now, we don't have to go anywhere to do that.
Right.
We can go to Stanford. You know, right. We can go to Berkeley. We can go to freaking Delta College in Stockton. You know what I'm saying? We don't have to go anywhere. And it's just the silence for my generation, man, is staggering. You know what I mean? I'm 44 years old, and I'm wondering, am I the only person, man, that has testicles still? Pardon my language, everybody out there. But you know what I'm saying, Harrison?
I do.
It's infuriating.
I do. I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. And the problem is, it's almost like a self-fulfilling thing where because people stay silent, more people stay silent. Like, it's usually – I've told this story before, but like, I've been in rooms where like everybody's quiet and just like one person will just be like, I disagree. And suddenly five people go, yeah, yeah, me too. Actually, I disagree too. Everybody out there is like waiting for somebody else to break the mold, waiting for somebody else to make that first statement. And then they're happy to jump in. You got to be the one to break the mold. And I'm telling you, it takes a little bit of practice, but you can do it and you can find strategies of doing this stuff that work really well. I've said it many times before, just a straight blanket statement that you can back up is often just a good thing. Just have it in your pocket. Just know that whatever happens, I always tell the story about talking about supporting Trump back in 2015, and I would just say, I'm against war, and Donald Trump's against war. Now, ironically, I'm going to have to, you know, maybe stop telling the story since we've been betrayed by Donald Trump, but just a phrase like that, right, where it's just like you can't argue against it. You just got to, like, except that I have a point. That's just the only way to do it, especially when he was up against Hillary Clinton, who clearly wanted war. Now you're in the position of either having to say, actually, war is good, or, you know, lie about Hillary Clinton. So, you know, having something like that where it's just like, well, you know, this war is for Israel. And you just like say that. Just like if people are talking, oh, this is crazy. Do you see this? Well, you know, this is all for Israel, right? It's just like just a little statement like that. You'll see again people, oh, I don't know. Just like you can just be confident. Just, guys, it's fine. This is a war for Israel. So that's just what it is. So sorry, you don't need to be scared of that fact, but just like assert things. You don't need to worry about what other people think. Honestly, great stuff, Joe. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Patrick in Oklahoma. Patrick, thank you for calling in again about the Iran war. Go ahead. You're on the air.
What a pleasure to talk to you today.
Good to hear from you.
Yes. No, it may not be the most popular opinion in these days, and I'm sorry to shine a light on what may be the most important military action in the 21st century so far. I believe that the loss of Persia to the hands of one of the most radical Islamic cults in the world that were relatively insignificant until 47 years ago when they were put in charge of Persia, one of the greatest, most valuable empires in the world. And with maybe $1 trillion behind them, I think they're responsible for the flipping of 5, 10, maybe 15 countries Islamic in the last 45 years, things they couldn't have done without being in charge of Persia.
Like what countries are you talking about?
I think Iran's been involved in funding Islamic movements in 40 or 50 countries, and many of them have turned. I mean, Malaysia, the Philippines, all over Africa, I mean, countries all over the world that are transitioning to Islamic control, and I believe Iran, I know the Shahs and the mullahs in Iran have been part of that.
Mm.
How many is debatable? 5, 10, 15, 20, were they at the root of all of them, half of them, a few of them? We don't, you know, that can be argued. But there are entire nations that have lost their freedom, as has Persia. Again, one of the most oldest dignified cultures in the history of the world is being run like, not even like, they didn't convert to Islam. So the contempt of the mullahs for the Islamic, for the Iranian people, the Persian people, is paramount.
Mm.
I mean, A Handmaid's Tale is written about what's happened in Iran in the last 45 years.
I mean, that is like the ultimate irony, right, is that you have all these liberal women that are somehow on the side of Islam. I mean, you know, you can explore that hypocrisy endlessly. But I would say, you know, whether or not that's true about Iran, and I have no reason not to believe that, I think when I look at the world, the way bigger pushers for Islam are the Saudi Arabians. And like all the people that are in Europe right now are not Shiites. They're all Wahhabis. They're all the Saudi Arabian, Pakistani style Muslims. So, you know, maybe Iran is doing that, sure. But if that's the metric we're going by, like, isn't Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries with the money they have, the, you know, ways in which they're insinuating themselves into the power structure, like corporate power structures of the Western world, bringing their people in? I mean, it seems to me like that's the bigger threat when it comes to Islam, right?
Well, Saudi Arabia has been run by a completely different branch of the government than the family, and then they were, was it 6 years ago, 7 years ago, whatever went on with the thing in Vegas, mm-hmm. and the arresting a lot of the royal family and the new guy with the beard taking over.
Mm-hmm.
That's a new branch. So, yeah, what was happening before them was much in line with what the mullahs have been doing. I mean, they aren't that different. I mean, again, they're on the same team until they win the world, and then they'll fight out the differences amongst themselves.
Right.
And they've even used as proxies against each other, and there's all sorts of things going on. But ultimately, they're aligned against Western society, and they'll work with the communists. And then once we're done, they'll fight it out amongst the communists, right? So again, everybody thinks they're going to end up on the top, and they're willing to make alliances along the way. I think America should be making alliances with the royal family of Persia, bring the sun back, very, very popular man. The Persian king is still a very popular man, and has, you know, the legal right to be there. You can argue about monarchies or whatever.
Here's the problem with that, though. Is the likelihood of something like that happening improved or made worse over the last 2 weeks? Seems to me like maybe if we hadn't started this very, like, painful war with Iran, where we are bombing schools and hospitals and, like, the Iranian people now may have been amenable to, you know, the Shah earlier. I think that bird has flown now that we've started war with Iran, right? I mean, again, so this is like, I don't even disagree with you. But then you look at what we're doing tactically, and it, like, it doesn't align with the goals you're laying out, right?
People went to the streets 7-8 weeks ago and got slaughtered by somewhere between 30 and 100,000 got slaughtered just a month and a half ago.
Debatably,
these people are willing to risk their lives again, going up. They don't have any guns, right? Going up against an armed militia, the Islamic army, and they went out the next night. And the next night, there were 10,000 killed. Then there were 20,000 killed. Then there were 30,000 killed. And the Persian people kept going out into the streets, thinking we were going to go back them up.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
for a couple weeks.
I mean, we know that was inspired like almost entirely by American actions, right? First of all, the sanctions that were designed to cause pain to the Iranian people, specifically to get in. We have Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, on video during those riots, while those riots were going on, saying, do you see what's happening? This is because I did this on purpose. I did the sanctions to, you know, cause trouble for the Iranian regime, and look at the outcome. And he's, you know, pointing to the riots. So it's like we create the economic conditions that make people angry. We send in CIA and Mossad agents with Starlink terminals to coordinate, resistance. Then we fire at the security people of Iran, who fire back. Now you've got a massacre. Now you increase, you know, the outrage against the government. So again, you know, maybe that could have worked if we sustained that. I still don't think it's an appropriate way to conduct foreign policy. I think we should stop trying to start revolutions around the world for everybody that doesn't, you know, bend their knee to us. I just think there's always these negative consequences. And at the end of the day, if that was our goal, then we just completely obliterated that possibility by bombing them in the way that we are. So again, it's not even that like I have this overwhelming love of Iran. It's just like in this latest, series of attacks, Iran is clearly the aggrieved and, you know, victimized party. They did not start this fight. They have not been trying to destroy America for the last 47 years, despite the projections from our side. They got attacked. They're defending themselves, and they're in a position where they can't stop until they achieve victory. So, you know, I'm not even saying you're wrong, Patrick, but what we're doing is not commensurate with freeing the Iranian people in any way whatsoever. We are literally, and in fact, I was looking for this tweet earlier, and you know what? I think I'm going to misplace it again. Here it is. So this is a transcript from a statement by the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dan Kane. And they said, quote, "Second, we continue to strike the Iranian Navy and their capabilities in order to do things like sustained movement through the Strait of Hormuz. And third, we continue to start working on going deeper into Iran's military and industrial base in order to prevent the regime from being able to attack Americans or interest and our partners for years to come and project power outside of their borders." So, and I agree with this interpretation from Marcus Stanley, who posted it, the U.S. mission now includes the permanent destruction of Iran's industrial base to prevent any power projection outside of their borders. A commitment to the destruction of Iran as an industrial society, not endless nation building, but an endless war of national destruction. So, you know, it's like our goal is not to help free Iran. It is not to rebuild Iran. Our stated blatant goal from the people in charge is we're going to destroy their industrial base. So it's like nothing about this is good for the Iranian people. Nothing about this is about the rebirth of Persia. That would be a beautiful thing if that was the case. That's not what's happening. It is pure wanton destruction, and it doesn't matter to them. If you're a mullah, it doesn't matter to them. If you're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, it does not matter to them. What matters is, are you willing to let them have a free hand in your country? Are you willing to let the international rules-based order exploit your people to the maximum degree? If you are, you're good, like Jolani. Doesn't matter you're an ISIS terrorist. You're a good guy. Doesn't matter that Bashar al-Assad was a moderate, an Alawite, not an extremist, an eye doctor who grew up in, like, the UK and who, you know, was able to keep all the various minority groups in his country from killing each other. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He had to go because he wasn't on the team. He wasn't playing ball with the bad guys, so he had to go. That's the only division that matters to these people. So, you know, the talk about it's literally just weaponizing and manipulating your best qualities of, like, you know, wow, we could see the Iranian people free. We could, you know, deliver the stuff. It's just like you're just being manipulated. I'm sorry to say that's never happening, and they don't want that to happen. They don't care. So don't, like, ascribe good deeds to them when all they're doing is destroying a country. Goodness. But I appreciate your call, Patrick. And look, I'm open to having my mind change, but so far, all I'm seeing is wanton destruction. Let's go to Flippin' Jay in Key West. Flippin' Jay, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, it's what an honor to talk to you again today. I got to say that I was taking X, too. I just remember you saying you had a new kind of iodine. I guess I've been just too busy to keep up with the times.
T3, trifecta T3? Iodine tincture, now available at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hell yeah. All right, so I was calling to state that, you know, what I'm noticing going on is Trump's running around like his head's chopped off, picking up as many resources as he possibly can get his hands on right now. And I feel like they're going along with their plan they've had this whole time with the 2030, and they're wanting to crash the economy. And in order to do that, they have to have control of all the resources. So where is he at? Over in Iran, in front of Hormuz, where all the resources are being transported. And he's over in, where did he go? Over to Venezuela, and now he's talking about taking over Cuba, so that trade route's all good. He's already took care of the Panama Canal, and, you know, and now he's just poking fingers at whoever he can to start this, you know, whatever conflict to get even bigger so that it just crashes, and then they'll be like, oh, does anybody want you know, world peace? Well, you know, let's do a global credit score, right? And that's where we're headed to.
So, okay, you kind of threw me for a loop there at the end. I thought you were making the case that, like, this is Trump, you know, seizing crucial resources around the world for America, but you think this is all in service of the globalist plan, actually.
Yeah, unfortunately, I do. I mean, you know, I like the idea. What I feel like we need, because you need a Trump was in cahoots with Hillary and Epstein, and you know, I was on the Ellen show, and I've met some people. I'm telling you what, they got their little groups, you know, and they're trying to make their little clique, and they're going for it, you know. So, I don't really. You know what? Here's a test. Here would be the test, all right? So, like I said, I'm the world's best sign flipper. Let's start a campaign. Let's start a campaign called Make God Great Again, all right? And let's take a sign from Key West, Florida. I'll walk that sucker all the way to the White House, straight to D.C. or to Mar-a-Lago, and I'll go flip that sign in front of the White House, and let's see if Trump wants to do the world's greatest sign flipping video of all time. And let's inspire Americans to show how great America is in their own unique way, and let's try to start like a real, you know, godly American movement.
Make God great again. Yeah, man, we got you, son. I love your energy. Thank you so much for the call. Flippin' Jay, the world's greatest sign flipper. Just close this out and to actually confirm what Flippin' Jay was just saying. This is from Geopolitics and Empire on X. The, quote, Gaza model, where 15-minute technocratic committee is overseen by a self-appointed billionaire-led board, is the new template for the world. Appointed, if the Board of Peace succeeds in Gaza, the Davos Charter allows it to intervene in, quote, any area threatened by conflict. This is no longer a conspiracy theory. It is now written in a charter. The Board of Peace is asking nations to choose, stay with the failing broken UN or join the, quote, most prestigious board ever assembled for a $1 billion entry fee. This is the end of international law as we know it. If the Sanhedrin and the Board of Peace have their way, the answer, oh, is this the end of international law? If the Sanhedrin and the Board of Peace have their way, the answer is yes. The most provocative aspect of this transition is not just the administrative replacement of the UN, but its projected physical and spiritual relocation. Because the nascent Sanhedrin and the prominent religious Zionist groups, such as the Torat Haaretz and Hatova Union, view Trump as a, quote, divine emissary or a modern-day Cyrus, the prediction is clear. The Board of Peace is destined to move its global headquarters to Jerusalem. So from Marco Rubio from Congress. Dear Marco Rubio, the administration's proposed Board of Peace is an initiative that started as an organization to oversee the peace deal between Israel and Hamas in Gaza has now morphed into an overt attempt to replace the United Nations with a new entity that Donald Trump would control. While purporting to be a multilateral peace initiative, the board's charter is designed to elevate one individual above all others and to concentrate power in his hands. In the context of the administration's broader assault on the United Nations and international institutions, the Board of Peace is a blatant power grab that will undermine both the UN and U.S. influence throughout the world. The Board of Peace has gone off the rails. I urge you to cancel or curtail this dangerous plan immediately. And, of course, we know that the Board of Peace, who the head of which was intended to be, if you remember, Tony Blair, who I don't know if you remember from our previous coverage, his son is running the digital ID in the UK, and he, of course, is one of the puppets utilized by the powers that be. And so, yeah, I'm very suspicious of the Board of Peace, and I do think they're trying to replace the UN with Davos and the Board of Peace, which is bad.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products. available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you can become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click of your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.